Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. We have new reports that the FBI has seized the cell phone of a Republican representative a day after the FBI raided the home of Donald Trump. This could be, I'm not going to say what it could be. I'm going to say this. George Conway, of all people, said they have crossed the Rubicon. Mm. I completely agree. We woke up when we got that news. We covered it. That was the moment this country was forever changed. And now we are in what Donald Trump calls dark days. We now have new information, which is lighting up the internet with conspiracy theories. The judge who reportedly signed the search warrant of Trump's home is linked to Jeffrey Epstein. And when I first heard this, I was like, linked to Epstein. What does that mean? Like, he knew a guy who knew a guy. And then it's like, actually, he was a federal prosecutor who switched sides and started working to defend Epstein's lieutenants. And it's like, oh, what? That's the guy. He's an Obama donor as well. Okay. Well, the other thing is, when stories like this big happen, that's all the news is. So we're going to talk about that. Plus, we got other weird stories like, okay, I'm just going to say it. Some dude was sending feces to Republicans in the mail. What? And Hillary Clinton is fundraising off of Trump being raided, basically saying that what she did was worse, but she got away with it. So give her money because she knows you will. Head over to timcast.com. Become a member to support our work directly and get access to our After Hours Uncensored show Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. We're going to have one of those shows for you tonight. And we had one with Larry Elder last night. It was particularly, it was really good. And check out the Library of Kind. We have Dave Landau. It was a really, really great members-only show. You'll want to check that one out. And then we've also got Tales from the Inverted World. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff in the works. We're launching new shows. We've got two documentaries currently being produced, which will be in the members-only section. We're going to be creating a whole bunch of content for you, so we really do appreciate it. Without further, also smash the like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Without further ado, joining us today to talk about all of this and more is Michael Seifert.
How's it going? Thanks for having me.
It's going well.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Who are you, good corn farmer, sir?
Yes, yes. My last name is pronounced Seifert, which apparently, in kind of German slang, used to mean exceptional corn harvester. Yeah. So I can thank my ancestors for the endearing nickname. My name is Michael Seifert. I'm the CEO and founder of a company called Public Square. That's how most people know me as of late. We are essentially the largest network of non-woke businesses in the country. We have been disheartened by the world of woke corporatism, so we built a platform that's interactive and social in nature for people to be able to connect with the companies that are standing against woke corporatism.
And I will also add on top of that, I'm excited you're here. We recently removed PayPal as a subscription option from timcast.com and use Parallel Economy, which is censorship resistant, co-founded by Dan Bongino. It's part of this Rumble anti-Silicon Valley big tech network or whatever you want to call it. But we here at Timcast, we're putting our money where our mouth is. And I'm excited you're here to talk about how we can do more, how other people can do more, and we can stop giving money to people who hate us.
Amen. It's that simple.
Right on. We also have Mary Morgan.
You do have me.
Yes.
Hi. My name's Mary. I co-host Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube. We're here at Timcast, and we cover all of the celebrities, movies, entertainment, art, culture, games, stuff like that. We have fun over there. I'm happy to be back, and I know you all missed me very much.
You also have Ian Crossland.
That's right.
Oh,
video
do.
Game
yes.
connoisseur, actor, musician. My pleasure to be here.
Your grace with your
presence.
Looking
forward. Thank you so much, Mary. Great to see you too. Let's keep it going.
That's right. I am also on Pop Culture Crisis every Wednesday, 3 to about 5 p.m. It's always a lot of fun. You guys should join us over there. Let's go.
Just real quick, what do you think we should leave with the Epstein thing or the raid? So the raid on the seizing of the cell phone, I think, is like big breaking news.
Yeah.
Because it's like, maybe we should go with that and then we'll talk about the Epstein stuff, right?
I think that makes sense.
Let's jump with this. We'll jump to the story then. We have this from Washington Times. Trump ally Rep. Scott Perry says FBI seized his cell phone. One day after the raid on former President Donald Trump, the FBI has seized the cell phone of a Republican member of Congress. Rep. Scott Perry, Pennsylvania Republican, said in a statement to Fox News that three FBI agents handed him a warrant and demanded his phone. Quote, "This morning while traveling with my family, three FBI agents visited me and seized my cell phone. They made no attempt to contact my lawyer, who would have made arrangements for them to have my phone if that was their wish. I'm outraged, though not surprised, that the FBI, under the direction of Merrick Garland's DOJ, would seize the phone of a sitting member of Congress." Mr. Perry's statement did not elaborate on whether he was told anything about what the FBI was seeking on the phone. Mr. Perry is a founding member and current chairman of the conservative House Freedom Caucus.
Oh, my God.
As a close ally of former President Donald Trump, the Democrat-appointed January 6th panel has shown interest in his communications with Trump around that time. It's fascinating. Wasn't Ron DeSantis also one of the founders of the Freedom Caucus?
I'm not sure.
Question. I would believe it.
We're big fans of the Freedom Caucus.
We are.
And I have to say, this is not surprising in the least. But, man, look, when a story like this happens, it's kind of like, oh, wow, that's bad. When Steve Bannon gets arrested, you're like, oh, wow, that's bad. After the raid on Donald Trump's home, it's a whole new territory. Mm-hmm. Now this is a sitting member of Congress had his phone seized by the feds.
Yeah, DeSantis did help start the Freedom Caucus.
Where we are right now is that it's not former administration officials. It is current elected representatives being targeted by the Department of Justice.
So where does this end? So I remember you talking about... Yeah, said it. Of course, you said it. All right, take your drinks, everyone. So Tim talked about this situation where there would be two cars driving somewhere. I don't remember the story.
It was Matt Taibbi. Matt Taibbi wrote this.
Really?
Matt Taibbi wrote, I think it was last October...
That's great.
...that we will get to the arrest that man phase, which sparks a civil war, where you will have two cars speeding towards a police jurisdiction where the men will jump out and then point at each other, arrest that man.
Is that where we are?
We're beyond that. So the question about that stuff is, will there be a fight over the institution of law enforcement? Democrats have weaponized it. Republicans are too weak.
Hmm.
Look, I appreciate Rick Santorum being on this show, but he was like, no, we got to follow the rules. We can't do this stuff. And it's like, I'll see you in the gulag, brother.
Yeah. Mm. I'm full abolish the FBI at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. mean, and that's the reality. It's like I think in the battle for law enforcement, there's still some constitution adhering, awesome local police officers, sheriffs, and communities around the country. But the FBI, and I'm not saying that they're all bad apples, but my goodness, I mean, the whole institution itself has been robbed and is so centralized in nature. So I people still have hope for it. I don't. I think the only answer with the FBI, an institution that's as nationalized and centralized as that at this point, is get rid of it.
We're in like
a
completely different reality. Maybe not completely, but relative to like 1970 when it was wiretapping phones and it was a big deal, like when Nixon got found to be wiretapping the Democratic, whatever it was, the Democrats during his campaign.
Yeah, the DNC or whatever.
Now it's digital. So much data is stored digitally. And for these companies to be able, and I'm calling the FBI a company because it's kind of functioning like its own company, is able to just like peruse digital data and scrape huge amounts of people's data, conversations and stuff. It didn't exist in 50 years ago. So maybe we do need new rules and functions. But the thing is, de facto, whoever can do it is going to do it.
Yeah.
So
I saw, Hassan Piker tweeted, you know, you're familiar with him, he's the left-wing guy. He said something about liking watching Steven Crowder cry to defund the FBI or whatever. And I'm like, hasn't Crowder ragged on the FBI for a really, really long time?
Yeah, this isn't new.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, so I'm like, I hear you, brother, Hassan, you know, when you're like cheering for Steven Crowder talking about defunding the FBI. And I'm like, many of us have been there for a while now. Maybe if you agree with that.
Yeah.
Maybe there's like a caucus that can be formed between progressives and Republicans where it's like, okay, we all agree. We're going to get rid of that one. Maybe the ATF while we're at it. I mean, they don't like the government, right? They're supposedly.
Yep.
So how about we all just say, abolish many of these DOJ, DHS institutions, huh? How about that?
I'm all in for getting rid of the three-letter agencies. Mm-hmm. I think it's time. You look at their track record. I'm a big, like, that you can tell a tree by the fruit, and the fruit of the FBI has been nothing but tyranny. Mm-hmm. That seems very corporate in nature for the last two, 3 decades. And this goes all the way back to, you're right, the 70s. And even, I would argue, even further than that. But the FBI is an institution. The CIA is an institution that has such a political agenda to it that it's impossible to claim that they're biased. And that's, you even had people today, like Andrew Yang, that was calling that out.
Yeah,
that was
Andrew
willing
Cuomo.
To admit that, yeah, like, this looks political in nature. And so when people's immediate de facto response at this point is like, oh, there's the FBI being political again, like, that's a sign that the tree is rotten. The fruit's mm-hmm. rotten. This thing needs to just be uprooted.
Yeah, 100%. This is the first time I've ever retweeted Andrew Cuomo, because he was on it quicker than some of these Republicans. Same for Andrew Yang.
But you know why he was on it?
Okay, sure,
first,
he's
worried. Right,
closet.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I will first say I can respect that Cuomo came out and said the right thing.
Right.
I will give him credit for that. However. I will then add, maybe the guy who killed 15,000 people by putting COVID patients in nursing homes might be a little worried about what the government's going to do when they go after politicians. Yep. He's sitting in his living room and he sees the news and he goes, wait, we're doing that now?
Oh,
I thought we were off limits. No. We got to. Yeah. When it comes for you, man. That's the problem with the weaponization of all this stuff. But I don't know how the Republicans. I don't know what the Republicans would even do. Kevin McCarthy's acting like, he's like, mark your calendar, Merrick Garland, because when we get in November, we're going to send you more sternly worded letters while you continually destroy this country.
I don't understand why, worst case scenario, or even just like normal case scenario, if Trump were to get elected again and to get in office, like, what would be that
he's
bad
gonna,
that
he's
would
gonna
happen?
Fire him.
Maybe people will get fired. Maybe that's what this is about. But like, really, the threat of our country is not there. There's no like, oh, maybe something is going to devastate. Like, we're okay. It's the economy is bad, and we need to fix the economy, regardless of who's in power.
The bureaucratic state has been in power for too long, and they will not let an elected official remove them from power. There is this parasitic entity that is the bureaucratic state latched onto our country, suckling away and controlling it like a brain slug, and Donald Trump is trying to remove it, but it's almost impossible. It is resisting. Mm-hmm. Yep. These people aren't elected. They get appointed. They stay in through numerous administrations, these civil servants. So I often, we've talked about it on the show, you know, a president gets in office, they're like, I'm going to get the troops out of the Middle East. Mm. And then a bunch of documents on the desk, and they say, no, you're going to bomb this guy, and this guy. And he goes, okay, I'm going to blow up kids. Yep. And that's exactly what happens. So when Donald Trump gets in, this is my theory, my hypothesis. They say, okay, Mr. President, you're the president, fine. Boom, they slam the files on the desk. This is our agenda. This is what we do. And he goes, no, we're not doing any of that. That's stupid. I don't know why you want to do that. And then they start saying, no, you don't understand. Like, we're the CIA. Like, we do these things. This is what we're doing in wine. He goes, don't know, don't care. How does it help America? And they're like, okay, we got to stop this guy. Hmm. I think there was a point before Trump got elected, he had a meeting with a bunch of like establishment figures. I was in D.C. for it. Apparently, he was like in a building somewhere. And I bet they were like, if you win, will you play ball? And he said, if I win, I'm the president and we're going to do what America wants. And then I think these people were like, okay, that's it. He can't win. He can't be allowed to win.
Yeah.
So I'll give you a real world. I'll give you an example. Our Middle Eastern agenda. I talk about it often, the Qatar-Turkey pipeline. We had a multi-presidential agenda. Doesn't matter who the president is. We were doing this, building these pipelines, trying to get energy into Europe, competing with Russia. Donald Trump comes in and goes, no, excuse me, no. And he shuts it all down.
Shut down the TPP too. The
TPP. Oh, that was like kicking him in the balls.
Yeah, really.
So they're shrieking. Yeah. Now Donald Trump says, I'm going to fire all of them. Schedule F. And they're just losing their minds.
Yeah.
So this is what you get when you have unelected bureaucrats who actually run your country. Ray signed off on this. This is what people are saying. Okay, I don't pretend to know what was going on in the inner workings of this. But this, they know what they're doing. They are trying to stop someone from being able to become the duly elected president for a second term.
This is also like, this is Kennedy. He came out and he was like, I'm going to break up the CIA. And then Kennedy got assassinated. Like, you don't threaten the CIA. If you're going to fire people, you just do it when you have the ability to do it. You don't like tell them all ahead of time you're going to do it.
Well, let me ask you, like, do you know what the, like, why leave, why, what was the motivation of Lee Harvey Oswald?
Hmm.
What the original, the actual story is.
Like, what's the, what,
I don't know.
What
like an angry communist Fidel Castro sympathizer and he didn't like Kennedy, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, that's
maybe,
the,
I guess.
That's the story.
Yeah. That's the story. But yeah. He was working with groups that were, I think what happened was he loaned a group of radicals his gun and then they placed, they killed Kennedy and put his gun in the building.
Well, didn't Kennedy want to get us, stop Vietnam or something like that?
Yeah, he was a pretty anti-war guy in general.
So why would a communist
escalating Vietnam.
He was escalating.
Yeah, but he had always said that there was a power greater than him that was manufacturing a lot of the crises that were happening. Remember, he was like, there's that famous quote that Kennedy was basically saying that I'm not fully the one in charge here. There's a whole different thing happening behind the curtain, and then obviously he's taken out.
Also, he and his brother Bobby went hard on the mob. Yeah. So they think maybe the mob was involved in killing him.
Yeah. Do you guys want to pull back the curtain a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, take a look at this story from the New York Post.
No.
The judge who okayed the Mar-a-Lago raid is an Obama donor once linked to Jeffrey Epstein.
What?
Now, I stated this in the intro to the show. When I heard the news, I said, yeah, what does Epstein linked mean? It's like his brother once catered a restaurant Epstein served dinner at. You know, you get these sensational headlines. And then I read it, and it was, he was a federal prosecutor who abruptly switched sides, joining the defense for Jeffrey Epstein, for his lieutenants, not for Epstein specifically. And, okay, that's weird. Check it out. Reinhart was elevated to magistrate judge in 2018 after 10 years in private practice. That November, the Miami Herald reported that he had represented several of Epstein's employees, including, by Reinhart's own admission to the outlet, Epstein's pilots, his scheduler, Sarah Kellen and Nadia Marcinkova, who Epstein once reportedly described as his Yugoslavian sex slave. Kellen and Marcinkova were among Epstein's lieutenants who were granted immunity as part of a controversial 2007 deal with federal prosecutors that allowed him to plead guilty to state charges rather than federal crimes. Epstein wound up serving just 13 months in county jail and was granted work release. Mm-hmm. That's really, really interesting. In the Miami Herald story, they mention, actually, look, they say he donated to Barack Obama's presidential campaign months after he left the local U.S. attorney's office to rep employees of the convicted pedo Jeffrey Epstein, who had received immunity in the long-running trafficking investigation of the financier. So this guy was accused. Many are arguing, I guess his side of it was, he didn't have any privy to information or anything. They say 10 months after starting work for Epstein's co-conspirators, according to the Federal Election Commission, Reinhart gave $1,000 directly to the Obama campaign and another $1,000 to its fundraising arm, the Obama Victory Fund. Though the records show the judge made mostly small dollar donations, blah, blah, blah. I don't know how much I care about the donation stuff, but I think what's interesting is that he's basically accused of flipping sides. In a 2013 court filing, Reinhart's former colleagues contradicted him, saying he had learned confidential non-public information about the Epstein matter while employed by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Reinhart noted to the Herald in response that a complaint filed against him by a lawyer for Epstein's victims had been dismissed. In a 2011 affidavit, Reinhart denied he had done anything improper and insisted that since he was not involved in the federal investigation of Epstein, he was not privy to inside information about the case. As recently as January 2015, Reinhart was asked to appear on Newsmax to give analysis on the Epstein fallout, but declined to publicly note his own role in the case. Okay, maybe it's just he's a judge in the area. That's all it is, right? Maybe it's just one big coincidence. My favorite conspiracy theory right now, Donald Trump apparently took classified documents to Mar-a-Lago. The conspiracy theory is he took it as leverage from his time as president. I mean, look, people were saying that if Trump lost, they would lock him up, right? And so now the theory is Trump took leverage. They're trying to get the leverage back. That being said, I do believe the simple solution in the absence of evidence is simply that Trump had a bunch of staffers grabbing boxes from the White House when he was leaving. Some of those boxes had documents. That's about it.
But if that's all that it is, like if I said this today, if I was on the left right now and if I was a big, you know, anti-Trump person, I would be furious at the FBI right now. I'd be furious at this judge because if you shoot the king and miss, like your whole case is destroyed. You just made the best possible argument for Trump 2024. So yep. If it's really just, oh, well, there's a few boxes that got pulled from some staffers and ended up in his house, and that was enough to issue this whole raid on his house. And you saw today the FBI saying, we don't like the word raid. Stop using raid. So Then you saw MSNBC go in real time and change the word raid to a routine search warrant. And so if it's all that it was, is just some boxes got left behind, like they just made the case for Trump 2024.
Which says to me, I mean, I believe they know that.
Yeah.
That going after a sitting president is a very, very serious matter. So they really wanted whatever those documents were. Again, look, when it comes to conspiracy theories, they're fun. I'd love to believe in a world where Trump is behind the scenes and he's like walking down the hallway and they're like, Mr. Former President, we have the plan. We have the documents here. And he's like, they don't know who they're up against. But in reality, it's like some intern grabbed a box and he's just like, what are they searching for? They're in my safe. And then they find a box and it's like just routine confidential nonsense. Is Trump the mastermind everybody wants him to be? Is there a deep underground? Is there a cabal? Is there a secret conspiracy? Are the elites at war?
I don't think he's a mastermind, but I do think you nailed it earlier when you were talking about some of the agencies in the deep state that his presidency exposed, like how big that rot was. So I think Trump's a guy more than anything that's just honest and pretty bombastic in nature. And so he came in and he's going with his playbook, and there are a lot of people in the way of that playbook. And I don't think it was because of his genius 4D chess. I think he was just being different than any president we've ever had. And in turn, it blew up a lot of the China that was in the Oval Office and in the bureaucratic establishment of DC. And then all of a sudden we're realizing that, like, whoa, the mess is way deeper than we realized. And so we credit that to Trump, but Trump's just being who he is. Trump just came in like a bull in a china shop and knocked everything over. And in turn, we're learning, like, whoa, this stench is rotten.
I think, you know, what I've said in the past about Trump is that he slips on a banana peel, but pulls a perfect backflip.
Yes.
Like you watch
great
him go,
analogy.
Whoa, and then
great
he just
analogy.
Like
great
the
analogy.
Ukraine gate.
Yeah,
the phone call he had with I think it was Zelensky.
Yeah.
was funny because he was like, what's this thing we're hearing about Joe Biden and the prosecutor? I don't know. Could you look into that? And it was like they tried painting Trump as this nefarious, like 4D chess mastermind who was orchestrating sabotaging Joe Biden's candidacy. When the reality was he was on Twitter and he saw a video someone retweeted of Biden saying, if you don't fire the prosecutor, you don't get the $1 billion. And then Trump's like, well, I better call this guy and ask him. And he's like, what is that? And so they're like, he's a mastermind trying to sabotage Biden. Nope. He probably slipped on a banana peel, but
it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Now we all know about it.
So more Forrest Gump than Adolf Hitler is what you're saying.
Yeah,
I think so.
Exactly. That's a good way to. That's a really good way
he's
to put it.
He's not thinking 10 steps ahead.
Yeah.
And it works out because people believe what they want about Trump. That's fine. My big thing is that I believe he means what he says, especially related to his motivations around things. Honestly, he's pretty forward about his own self-interest in a lot of dealings, but his self-interest ends up helping the American people in a lot of ways. This was his campaign in 2016, is like this pro-America nationalist sort of mentality around things like manufacturing and the economy in general. Like that resonated with American people because by being himself, in turn, it was really fighting for the interest that Americans finally felt like were represented by a political candidate.
And I just, you know, I'm chilling. Things may be bad. The night is always darkest before the dawn. But from 2016 to now, when you think about how the establishment lost control, it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
the Schadenfreude of their failures is.
He gave me a psychic jolt of like you as an American can take care of yourself and your immediate reality, but. It also, I've started to think about the military-industrial complex, and I used to be very hateful of it and critical of it, but now I'm like, there's gonna be one on Earth. There's gonna be an overarching military. Is it gonna be one that the U.S. controls, or is it gonna be one that China controls?
I just wanna make sure I issue a clarification, because it may have sounded as if we were saying he does have classified information. I don't know that.
Yeah, that's just the accusation.
Yeah.
People are claiming that the feds did seize the documents they were looking for. I don't know if that's confirmed.
I saw these tweets where they're like, well, if they went in there, that means they had to have gotten a warrant, which means he must have been committing a crime. I'm like, what in the hell kind of reverse logic did you do?
Well, they don't believe in the Fifth Amendment.
Innocent until proven guilty. And just because they say they found something doesn't mean they found something. We got to, you know, you really need evidence here. We got to display evidence. I don't like the Patriot Act. I don't like that people can detain people without recourse. This is insane.
Are you starting to understand the banality of evil, Ian? These are people who are cheering for the idea of guilty until proven innocent. Hmm. Well, I don't hear innocent people getting raided by the FBI, so clearly it must mean Trump's guilty. Yeah,
if you have nothing to hide, then let them spy on you. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's not how it works, man. You have the right to privacy.
Yeah, and I tweeted something the other day about the IRS and how these 87,000 agents are coming and are going to make your life worse in every conceivable way. And someone said, well, you shouldn't be worried if you don't have anything to hide. And I'm like, so I should be fine with surveillance because I don't have anything to hide. That's the exact same argument. Like,
what about your balls?
Yeah, right.
Like, if they're like, putting cameras everywhere, maybe you don't want people looking at your body.
And also, what if they pass some new law where it's like, it's illegal to be a human. And then they're like, you're like, or it's illegal to walk outside on TV. Like, you can't make a stupid law and then spy on someone to see if they're violating your stupid law and then bust them for that.
Yeah, like, just because your conscience is clean and you're not doing anything wrong doesn't mean you should have your house broken into, especially when you're the former president of the United States with all the political implications that come with that. And then even this representative from Pennsylvania, like, he just said what happened. Agents walked up, took his phone. They could have gone through the lawyers. There would have been a cordial process, but it was that, nope, you know what? We believe you're guilty already, and we're just going
to
yank it.
They wanted to make sure he didn't delete anything off his phone, but like, they gave Hillary Clinton plenty of time to scrub her emails.
She had her phone smashed with hammers.
Yeah.
Of course, she was working with the DNC and the Democratic establishment. I don't like calling it. I don't want to play Democrat-Republican here. She's with that liberal economic order, and I don't think this guy was.
Fair point is that Trump has not been charged with anything. And they did take Hillary Clinton's server and scan through it and read every email. So,
yeah, I saw some pretty damning stuff come out of her emails.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I mean, there was for one, the WikiLeaks stuff,
yeah,
the DCCC and things like that. But she had 110 classified emails. So people are pointing out now, like, yeah, well, they did it to Hillary and she didn't get charged with the crime and Trump's not being charged with the crime. And it's like, yes, we understand. There is a double standard.
Yeah.
They're not going to come out and be like, well, Trump did it, but so did Hillary. No, they're going to be like, Trump did it. Lock him up.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting the feeling people are like starting to accept that it's like, maybe the government is kind of dirty and evil and they got a side that they want you to be on, but I just want to be on that side then. Let's just keep doing our life. Let's keep having Sunday cookouts and eating watermelon and life's going to be dandelions. Mm-hmm. But like, at some point you got to stand up for righteousness itself and like, not just be in a club. I don't know, man. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it's like pick your tribe, and that's how it's always been.
I don't know. I don't know how you would go to sleep at night. If I knew what was right and I don't do it, it's that exact thing. I'm denying righteousness. I'm denying the opportunity to make change. I think people have lost the hope that they can make change, which is a deeper issue, because I think they feel like, okay, well, the establishment's in place and clearly it's not moving. If they're willing to go after the former president, like, they can destroy my life. I think there's a level of hopelessness. But my big encouragement to people all the time is, like, that happened over the course of a few decades. It can be reversed over the course of a few decades as well. Like, all you need is someone to come into different positions of power in regions around the country that basically strip everything out. One thing that I'm excited about, that I was disappointed in Trump, even going back to this conversation in 2016, is he had all these hopes of draining the swamp. He gets in, he refuses to fire a lot of the people that made the problems really, really bad. His worst mistake was that he had personnel around him that was really detrimental. Now, I think if it was to be him or anyone in 2024, you're right, Ian. Everything is so out in the open that it's like you can't deny it anymore. You have to uproot or else we're not going to make it moving forward.
This is why they won't allow a power transfer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
This is the Democratic establishment, the Democrats and many conservatives rejecting the peaceful transition of power. But they're doing it early. It's funny because there's viral tweets. Jack Posobiec retweeted one guy who was criticizing Trump over Ukraine gate, saying he was going after his political rival. And it's like, where are you now?
Mm. Yeah.
Because what's the difference?
Yeah.
If that was your argument.
Yeah.
Joe Biden didn't announce he was running for president. No one thought he was going to.
Yeah.
They didn't think he was a front runner. And the funny thing is, many progressives who are Bernie progressives were telling me, like, he's clearly going after Biden. And I'm like, aren't you a Bernie supporter? Like, what makes you think Biden is the front runner? Why wouldn't Trump be going after Bernie? He was the guy everyone was talking about. And they were like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah.
You know, in regards to what you're saying, Michael, about winding it back, like, it took us 20 years from the Patriot Act to get to this crazy surveillance state that we could wind it back. I don't know if that's true because the digital data is there to be scraped. And it's like we have to go forward and create like encryption, like levels of quantum encryption that even government agencies and military complex machines can't hack if that's possible. And it's like, there's no, it's like an avalanche, and we're not going to make the avalanche go back uphill. You just got to figure out how to build a suit so that you can swim the avalanche and not get crushed by the snow.
What does reversing course mean for individuals anyway?
In what context?
in this transfer of power.
Well, because we complied with it for two decades. Mm-hmm. Like, we've done the things. We've danced the dance. We've done what they've told us to. We bought the stuff from China. We sacrificed our convictions and what made America special on the altars of cheap convenience. We did the things so that we could have levels of ease and convenience in the marketplace and our travel experience and et cetera. And I think part of reverting course in my mind looks like the average American standing up and just detaching from that system anymore, saying, I'm not going to keep going along with it. And so we saw a lot of that happen in the past year with COVID and the whole vaccine mandate stuff, is you had people finally get pushed to a brink where they said, like, my job's on the line, but I don't care. My convictions are so strong that I'll let them fire me. They'll take away the demand, and then you see companies start to revert course because of that. I think that's how we do it.
For a lot of people, it wasn't just about convictions. It was just a stress test.
Yeah.
Some people were like, I'm just done. I'd rather sleep under a bench. Yep. I'd rather just sleep in the street than deal with all of this stuff.
Yep.
Let me pull up this next story. We have this tweet from Talk Radio 77 WABC. Oh, yeah. Breaking news! Palm Beach authorities on alert about armed protesters expected at Mar-a-Lago. And I love the comments. People are saying things like, it's going to be a bunch of guys in polo shirts, khaki shorts, and sunglasses.
You know it.
With short trim hair. And, yeah. And that's right, Fed boys. So I don't know if there's any developments on this or how much this story is legit. We did see a bunch of people out in front of Mar-a-Lago protesting and cheering for Trump. And so when I see a story like this, for one, Fed boys, that's basically what everybody is saying, that they're going to come out and it's going to, you know, what would you call it, I guess, a false flag?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, the feds are going to come out pretending to be Trump supporters or something.
And then get rowdy.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not just that. They're going to lure groups who aren't part of the Fed to participate, but then maybe there's the hanging threat that the feds are going to incite violence and then blame it on the ordinary people they lured there.
Exactly.
That's what happened at January 6th, right?
Yeah.
Well,
unverified.
We don't know that.
There are suppositions like with Ray Epps that he had been a plant. No one really. I don't even know if that's ever been confirmed. Did he used to work for the FBI or anything?
I don't know or care about. To speculate on Ray Epps because of what they're trying to do to manipulate that story. My point on this is simple. Let's approach it from, hey, there's a guy on camera inciting violence. You should arrest him.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. That's the target, not the other
Instead, people. What they're doing is they're using the fact that people have claimed conspiracy theory to discredit the entirety of the Ray Epps scandal.
But yeah. Epps was yelling, like, let's go to the Capitol stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's on video.
Like,
yeah.
Very blatant.
Let me tell you about this tactic used by leftists for a long time. What they do is, they'll get a handful of people. They will organize a peaceful protest so they can get mass. And they'll say, everybody come down and march and raise your fist. They will coordinate different groups with their strategy. They'll say some people's job is to obstruct. So they'll convince people like, hey, stand here. The people don't know what they're doing.
Right.
When they go for a peaceful protest, they have no idea the plan of the organizers.
The pawn has no idea that the knight is about to move next.
And so what they'll do is they have aggressors, basically, that will mix in the crowd and incite the violence because they want to do two things. They need the cover of a mass group to be able to engage in violence and get away, and they also want videos of these regular people being beaten by cops. So they will start the fight. The regular person will get hit. They will then go to that regular person and say, why were the cops hitting you? What? Oh, can you believe? You got to join us, man. That's how they recruit. That's the plan.
That's how the FBI works to perpetuate its own existence. They create the reasons that they supposedly exist.
Mm-hmm. Right. Look at the Whitmer thing.
Yeah. Great example.
Yeah. What was it like? They were all informants.
Yeah. It was like one guy that wasn't.
Yeah.
The poor guy just got brought in. And that's what they do. They'll target the lonely people that are isolated from community, and they'll lead them to feel like they're part of some movement. And it's all these feds that are inviting them into creating a problem that requires them to be the solution. And there are a lot of people that do this in the corporate world, too. I mean, George Soros gets accused of this often, right? Putting money toward destruction so that he can come in and profit off the cleanup. You know, there's a lot there that we've seen this time and time again. Part of the reason I'm so frustrated with the FBI and their dealings is that it's not just what they're doing, like this Trump scenario, like this guy with his phone. It's also what they're not doing. So in the process of spending all of their time sending all these agents to Trump's home, they're ignoring the fact that the current president's son, we have him on video and photo evidence instances where the guy is dealing in incredibly illegal activity and they're silent. Or Larry Nassar, silent.
What's like the Larry Nassar thing?
The gymnastics, USA Gymnastics.
I don't know about this. Tell me about
it. Yeah,
he's abusing the girls?
Yeah. And the FBI knew about it.
Yeah, they knew.
They knew about Epstein.
Yeah, they knew about Epstein. I mean, the examples are endless, and you're absolutely right. Oftentimes, they need to boost their budget. They need to create problems so that they can exemplify why they're needed as a solution.
Another example of that, I think, is industrial, agricultural, pharmaceutical, like this thing where they'll feed people bread that's sprayed with glyphosate, the wheat, as a desiccant to dry it out before harvest. It makes people just like grotesquely ill, and then they create pills that will, you know, treat it. And then so they're not only creating the glyphosate or these, I don't know if it's all the same people, but they're creating the chemicals that to put on the food that make the people sick. Then they make the medicines to it's self-replicating.
Then the medicines make people sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times they do. A lot of times the treatments make people more sick than the diseases themselves. It's a terrible reality of using like experimental medicine on a population. It's devastating.
Well, a perfect example recently is that I'm not insinuating anything, YouTube, but Pfizer is upping their intentionality with heart issue medicine. Mm-hmm. So issues like myocarditis, pushing prescriptions that solve that issue. You make your conclusions as to why. But yes, it's this exact thing. Pfizer and these big pharmaceutical companies, they operate by the same playbook.
Wasn't there like a document recently? I saw some story where they basically said we should reconsider curing diseases.
Really?
You saw that?
That sounds like a type of headline you could expect.
Oh, I hope you got that
on.
Can
you Google that?
I'll look it up right now.
I saw that on Twitter. They were like, we should reconsider. I can't remember where I saw it. It may actually be an old story. Like, reconsider.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was something about like.
Yeah. Is it a story or just an opinion piece?
No, I think I saw it was a document from. I could be wrong. That's why I'm saying fact check it because I just saw it on social media.
It was something like from anything? A drug company, and they were like, it's not really monetarily wise to cure diseases. We just need sell these pills. Let me look it up.
I'm seeing from popsci.com, we're closer to curing all diseases than we think. They're like curing blindness. I mean, if we can actually heal the blind and let the blind see again.
A lot of people think they have the cure to cancer and are hiding it from everyone.
So
they have to pay for the treatment.
The truth is that cancer comes from so many different sources that there's not like a single cure for cancer. So I understand the thinking because the cost of fixing cancer is extremely lucrative. But you find it?
I mean, I found a story.
Oh, snap.
From MedPage Today.
What?
Curing patients is bad for business.
Well, yes.
Apparently, they say an article by Take Him on CNBC, Goldman Sachs issued a report, so it's not a drug company, that suggested that drug developers might want to think twice about making drugs that were too effective. What do you say? The potential to deliver one-shot cures is one of the most attractive aspects of gene therapy, genetically engineered cell therapy and gene editing. However, such treatments offer a very different outlook with regard to recurring revenue versus chronic therapies. While the proposition carries tremendous value for patients and society, it could represent a challenge for genome medicine developers looking for sustained cash flow.
Oh, medicine developers looking for cash flow. That's so gross.
Isn't the first light bulb ever still on and has been on for like 100 years in like a firehouse in New York or something like that?
Wow. I don't know.
Yeah, can you pull that up?
About that.
The argument, the idea was that they needed planned obsolescence. Otherwise, you'd sell a light bulb and then you'd never sell another one.
It was too effective.
Yeah. Too effective.
Well, yeah, I found the article from CNBC that says Goldman Sachs asks in a biotech research report, is curing patients a sustainable business model? And I guess it kind of makes sense that it's not, which makes us then ask why.
Yeah, 2018, we have it right here, CNBC.
Yeah, it's from a few years ago.
Just use gene therapy that wears off and you need to boost it.
Yeah, you need more boosters, baby.
Or how about a two-stage gene therapy? The first one cures it. The second one starts it back up.
Yeah, just a perpetual cycle.
Or a subscription service.
Yeah.
Okay. How about how about it cures the disease, but also gives you a different disease that requires paying a subscription?
Like a one-for-one program.
Yeah, you get
so swap.
Violence, if violence is the disease, then the military-industrial complex is the treatment. It's not a cure. It's a treatment because if they cure the violence, then they're no longer necessary, and then we won't have any reason to fund a military. But then that's because they're afraid that violence will strike again, that it'll never truly be gone, And they're just saying with illness, illness will never truly be gone. Mm-hmm. So if we stop making medicine, we won't be prepared when a big one comes, when an asteroid land or a comet lands that has a bacterium on it that causes some new disease that Pfizer wasn't ready for. I understand that living in fear like that. It comes to a point where you got to not try and profit off of the pain and suffering of humans.
Hmm. So, you know, I was talking about this earlier. There's a point in history when you look at major historical moments, like Spanish Civil War or the Russian Revolution or Nazi Germany, when people left, they moved to other countries and survived. And I you'd always read and ask them, like, why did your family flee? What made them realize? And, you know, Nazi Germany obviously being the obvious one because of how bad things got. They say things like the demonization of these groups, and we were like, they're targeting us. But then the other question is, why did people stay? And a lot of people stayed thinking it could never happen, mm-hmm. that it wouldn't get worse. And so I was thinking about, like, Kristallnacht, right? You're familiar?
Yeah. The broken glass.
Yeah,
Tell me elevator pitch. I'm familiar, but in case people don't know.
People went around smashing up Jewish businesses.
It was like in one night in Germany, Nazi Germany.
I don't know the full historical details other than the general idea.
It was in one night.
Yeah.
Night of broken glass.
It was a pattern that went on for weeks, but it was one specific night, Kristallnacht, night of the broken glass, that was like lived in infamy because it was this horrible night that the country, it was sort of like a Rubicon moment where it's like, you guys just crossed a major line that's going to be impossible to come back from. And then it just de-escalated into everything that Nazi Germany became.
It escalated into
everything. Yeah, I should say. The country de-escalated. Yeah, yeah. That's a better way to word it.
So, you know, I've read about people who said, like, when that happened, they were like, we have to get out of here. And then there are a lot of people who didn't. And it's like, when something like that happens, why didn't you get out?
Yeah.
They weren't activated socially, that's for sure. Those people had no idea what was going on.
No, I think it's because we have the gift of hindsight.
Yeah. Mm.
So I'll give you an example. AOC comes out and fabricates a story about January 6th that someone knocked on her door and said, where is she? Where is she? And she's like, I'm hiding in the bathroom. And I thought, this is it. I'm going to die or whatever she said. I don't know. That story happened an hour before anyone had breached the Capitol, a full hour. She had no idea. However, in hindsight, she knows. Most people don't know the details of the day. All they know is people stormed the Capitol. So if she tells this story, it sounds like this thing happened. When we read history and we read about Kristallnacht and things like that, we think, well, how could they not have seen it coming?
Yeah.
Only because we know what did happen. Today, I don't mean to imply that what's happening now is identical to what's happened in Nazi Germany or anything like that. History doesn't repeat, it rhymes. There are similarities. Take a look at anything that's happened in the past couple of years and ask yourself why you haven't fled, because you don't know what lies ahead. And so for us to look back on history and know what the end result was, we'd say, clearly at that point I'd get out. Would you? Would you really? Any of you? Maybe after, I don't know, billions of dollars in damage when a Marxist political faction ransacked this country from the biggest cities to smallest town. When we have quotes from a guy who said there was fighting in his building and he called the police in New York and they said, sir, the city is under attack. What would you have us do? When we saw riots in almost every major city, $2 billion was the insurance cap on the damage, 30 plus dead. And everyone says, it's just a riot. Maybe it will become something worse. And then I wonder if in 50 years, people will look back at the Summer of Love and say, why didn't they get out when that happened? When you had Black Lives Matter, an identitarian Marxist organization, smashing things up, organizing destruction. They thought everything was fine? Well, I'll tell you this. A lot of people have already fled to Mexico. We read that story. We thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Max, a lot of people are going to El Salvador and Costa Rica.
Max Kaiser. Max Kaiser prominently and Stacey Herbert have gone to El Salvador because they're huge maximalists for Bitcoin and that they've adopted Bitcoin as a national currency in El Salvador. El Salvador, yeah? Yeah, El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. El Salvador.
And like Einstein fled the Nazis. Einstein fled in like what?
Early.
36, 33 or so, early. 35. Yeah, way, way early.
So that's just a question I have. I mean, so we're now at the point where the Department of Justice under one political faction has just raided the home of the front runner of the rival political faction. Several members of his administration have been arrested. They have now seized the phone of an active member of Congress. Like, at what point are you like, hey, we're kind of in the thick of things where usually in history we learn about the people who survived are the ones who fled? I will say, many people don't flee because they're like, this is my country and I will not let it collapse.
That's me, man. I can't, you know, we live in California. And so it's, California is where everyone else will be in 10 years. I mean, you're from New York, same deal. Any of these big blue kind of metropolitan, progressive, authoritarian strongholds. The California lifestyle at this point is so blatantly not in our favor that it's like, if you're going to stay, it's because you have to feel a special sort of conviction to stay. So I don't blame anyone that's left to Texas, that goes to a red state and sets up shop there. Good for you. It makes sense. For us, though, it's like, man, there's something holding me here that I can't leave. And in the same way in the United States, it's like, it's going to get worse before it gets better. This is our country. I can't leave.
Like, no matter where you flee, you run into more problems anywhere you go.
Yeah, geez, you see the way they handle people in New Zealand, the way they handle lockdowns in Australia, kicking people's doors in and
throwing them in. Mexico and El Salvador have their own problems that I don't think we want to deal with.
You know, when we're talking about all this, Mexico's
doing pretty well.
I've been thinking a lot about fleeing and like, where would I go? What would I do? But I think what's happening is the United States is freaking awesome. And the state's control is really an awesome part of why. But people are fleeing, but they're fleeing states.
Yes.
That's what you see the people, they got out early. They got out last year. They got out when COVID lockdowns.
It's a bad sign if people are losing their allegiance to their state and their local area, though.
I want to
point something indication.
Germany, if that's an example, is what, roughly the size of Texas or comparable?
A little smaller
than that?
I think.
We're a big country.
Yeah.
When the Summer of Love happened, we did get out. We left the South Jersey suburbs and came to West Virginia, Western Maryland and West Virginia.
Right.
So I literally was like, I'm getting out of this place.
Right.
So this is crazy.
There's a couple of reasons why people wouldn't leave. First of all, because they don't have the money to do so. Like right now, I don't have the funds to pack up and move to El Salvador. I have no idea where I would work or what I would do if I were to do that. And the other reason that people would not leave the U.S. and ostensibly some of their states is that there is nowhere else to go. And I know that like Steve Hilton stays in California because he thinks that maybe he can save it. And he has people who agree with him. I have heard that much of California is not insane, crazy LA people.
We're not.
Right. They're all Orange County.
There are a few of us.
Right. Yeah. There's some actual conservatives over in California because there are a lot of people there. There are a lot of reasons to stay in the U.S. And I feel like this is just something we're going to have to go through. Yep. I don't know what else to say.
Let me pull up this story from Yahoo News. Hillary Clinton promotes But Her Emails merch FBI search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago.
Seriously?
Yeah, this is tough.
So her fundraiser pitch is, I did something way worse, got away with it, and now you're going to give me money.
Oh, my gosh.
The day after his house got raided.
Literally 12 hours.
What is happening?
Drops merch.
And she has that, like, Photoshop picture of her looking like a younger picture of her with her huge, all that work done on those cheekbones. Like,
Look. I don't care about the merch stuff. Trump has dropped targeted merch. He's also made fun of Democrats in a similar way. We really are seeing the left try to learn from how the right did meme warfare with like the dark Brandon meme.
They're really trying.
Did you see this? They made a Nazi meme of Joe Biden and then they unironically posted it. And people were like, what are you doing? Like, that was made to make fun of Joe Biden. Why are you posting it?
Do you have that image available? Nazi meme
Pull
Biden?
Up dark Brandon rises and then go to images.
Wasn't there a thought that this was a... Was it you and I that was talking about this?
Yeah.
That this was like a Chinese op type deal?
Yeah, I wasn't able to confirm this. I saw something on Twitter. I know everything
on
Twitter is
true. Because I was super curious.
Yeah, I really want to look into that.
There it is.
So we have it right here.
This is the eagle.
Here it is.
So this is a mockery of The Dark Knight Rises, where there's
so
a bat. There's a skyscraper, and he's looking down, and there's like a bat in the buildings. And so they did this eagle, which many people pointed out is very similar to the Nazi eagle.
And he looks like Vladimir Lenin in that picture.
Yeah, what's going on?
Maybe you guys, when people make memes to make fun of Joe Biden and then you just take them and repost them, you should probably look into what you're doing.
Yeah.
Was this supposed to be endearing?
They're just like, illiterate to the internet.
This is like in your face. Like if history looks back and they're like, this is when the United States went full like totalitarian and then you see that image and they're like, oh, they just blatantly told everyone he was going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but like Joe Biden doesn't even know this meme exists.
Yeah. Joe's...
You see the video of him trying to shake Chuck Schumer's hand twice?
Oh my gosh.
That was weird.
And the jacket?
Just held it there.
Yeah. Well, no, he shakes it. So here's what Chuck Schumer talks, turns around, shakes Biden's hand. Biden puts his hand down and then looks and then pulls his hand out again and just stares at him and then like puts it to his face.
What?
I can't imagine living in the fever dream that Biden experiences on a daily basis. They're like bringing BTS into the White House, and he's like, "Hi, who are you?" And they don't speak any English.
What's BTS?
That Korean
pop. K-pop. Oh, okay.
What does BTS mean?
It's a good question.
Bangtan Soyeondan.
Is that what it means?
Does it?
I don't know. No
behind
knows.
The scenes?
I thought yeah, it was behind the scenes or something like that.
No idea. No.
Bangtan boys.
You're right, though, on the fundraising piece. Do you remember last year when there was that video that came out attacking DeSantis because they didn't want him to get credit for how awesome Florida's doing? So they basically tried to showcase that Florida's this terrible place full of freedom, and it was like this lovely video of all these people smiling and laughing, and they're like, they don't take masks seriously, and it's this family
they
walking
look
on the beach.
So happy.
It's like, yeah, you guys don't realize, but you keep shooting yourself in the foot when you try to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trump's done similar things, and Trump supporters have done similar things in terms of making targeted merch. But my point on the whole thing is, like, coming out and being like, we got away with it, not give us money, it's kind of like, you know, people are already worried about a double standard and an imbalance in the justice system. Cackling while you raise money off of it is probably not going to help this country.
No.
But, you know, the funny thing is many of these Democrats think Donald Trump is the one who's committing all the crimes because they don't read the news.
Yep. Mm. Dude, what is up with people are obsessed with the cult? Like, but what I mean is the cult worship of the humans. Like, this political, I'm all about politics and understanding the way government works and how many people you need to hire to be in the Republic and to facilitate the transfer of power. But, like, when you get obsessed about the individuals and you're like, well, Joe Biden, if some people talk about Joe Biden, then another person's like, yeah, but Trump, like, that has nothing to do with what I'm talking about right now. I let's focus on, and it's like it's a video game or like a movie and they're talking about their favorite characters or the villains they hate. Like, It seems so detached from reality of, like, you better get enough food for your kids, like, or for yourself. We got to really focus on making sure we reach our basic necessities.
Yeah, the people who live in cities, for the most part, have no idea when it comes to basic necessities.
No.
I was arguing with a guy on Twitter once. It was really funny. He was a Yang supporter. And, like, I was a big fan of Yang early on. I think he's done things I don't agree with, but he's all right. He's, you know, whatever.
Oh, I love him.
But he was talking about UBI, and I was like, I agree with, like, he's created this huge, extensive policy list. He's really thought about it. I respect that. But UBI makes no sense. I asked some guy, we were arguing, and I can't remember exactly what the context was, why we brought it up, but I mentioned, like, eventually there's not going to be food in supermarkets, or eventually people won't be able to source things like milk if there's no one who's, you know, who's doing base level jobs, or we have to create a surf class. And he's like, what do you mean? The milk's at the store. And then I was like, yeah, but, like, the milk won't come from the production to the store, so people can't get it. And he's like, what are you talking about? People can just go to the store to get milk.
Oh, gosh.
And then I was like, the store won't have milk when the people that bottle it don't sell it to them. And he's like, I don't know what you're trying to say. And I'm like, whoa.
Oh, my gosh.
Did you guys see the video last week of the girl that's the farmer who was showcasing the bale of hay in her trunk? Did you guys see this?
No.
And she was talking about how much the price has skyrocketed of her hay.
Oh,
that she has to get to feed her cattle that then produce the milk and the meat. And so she talks about how her hay is, like, quadrupled in the last 12 months. And her warning to everyone is this will be passed on to you this fall.
Of course.
Like, if you think that this is isolated, wait till it hits the shopping centers and you see your price of beef and of milk skyrocket because to feed these animals is becoming so incredibly expensive.
Even chickens.
Yeah, even chickens.
But here's the thing people need to understand, too. Yeah. We give these animals corn. Now, there are a lot of farms. You come out here, and we see the cows eating grass all day.
Yep.
You got the chickens. They're eating feed. They're eating layer. But they're eating bugs. But in a lot of places, it's just corn. The factory-farmed salmon, corn. Yeah, subsidized. Yeah, really gross.
I need to reclaim my name's heritage. And
I don't know if this is true, but I heard that tilapia are fed in farms underneath these cages or, like, wire platforms that chickens are above them and, like,
crap into
the water, and then the tilapia eat it.
I don't think that's
like how they feed the tilapia.
I don't think that's possible.
That goes into grocery stores.
I hope not.
I don't think that's possible because the chickens have one hole, a cloaca.
Yeah.
And there's a hen has three things. They have, like, where the egg comes from, and they have, like, the poop and the peat, and it mixes together.
Yeah.
So you've got urea
and
other
stuff.
So it
would poison the water is the reason they couldn't do it.
The water would just become toxified.
I hope it's not true. I don't want it to be true.
I remember working in the restaurant industry for, like, 15 years, you know, up until about 5 or 6 years ago, and they would talk a lot about farm farmed tilapia. It was way nasty. It was like one of the nastiest fish you could ever order from a restaurant is farm. You want wild tilapia if you're ever going to get tilapia. I don't know why, though. Maybe it has something to do with that. Maybe not.
You know what I'd prefer to believe? You know, people who believe in these big conspiracies, you know, like, I don't think there's a grand global cabal. I think there are powerful interests vying for power and colluding behind the scenes. So the Epstein stuff, like, well, I mean, Maxwell was convicted. Like, we know they were doing this stuff, and we know they were connected with powerful individuals. Maybe it was blackmail or whatever. But they clearly didn't have full control because Epstein is no longer alive, and Maxwell is locked up. So it wasn't, you know, I don't think that there's one, like, Illuminati or something like that. I just think powerful interests do this stuff. I'd prefer to believe that aliens controlled everything. It's, if I'm gonna believe something, you know, as grandiose, I'm gonna shoot for the stars.
They do.
Literally, yeah. And assume it's aliens.
Some people call them God. Other people call them aliens. Some people call them interdimensional beings. Yes.
Yeah. So when you mentioned JFK saying there's, like, a greater force at play, we're all imagining there's, like, some military-industrial complex, but it's actually a fifth-dimensional DMT elf or something. You know, a demon from beyond the veil.
Joe Rogan would fall out of his chair.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's more fun to believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
More fun.
Yeah. It's well, definitely true. Spirit war is no joke. Were you going to say?
Well, no, I was going to say, absolutely. I'm a big believer. You know, I'm a person of faith. I believe that a lot of this is spiritual warfare. And it's interesting to see the people who have realized that over the past few years. I heard Tucker Carlson speak, of all people, and he was speaking actually at a church that I go to in San Diego.
Oh, cool.
And this guy's on stage, Tucker Carlson, largest talk show. This was like 3 months ago. Largest talk show host in the world. And this guy looks at this audience and says, I am thinking I'm insane in real time for even saying this. Because I, 2 years ago, never would have believed myself if I said what I'm about to say. Everything that we're seeing is that there's something deeper going on. Yes. There's something spiritual. I'm not sure what it is, but there's some deeper war at play here because this doesn't make sense anymore. Like, all the basic fabrics of a fabric of humanity is being ripped up. Things related to our identity. Who are men? Who are women? Like, basic things that we just accepted as truth for thousands of years. Now people are attacking. And so he basically said, I have come to believe that this is far greater than politics. This is way deeper. And so I do think there's, like, a cultural shift happening when we're all realizing that this goes a lot deeper than just party politics. It's not like a GOP versus Dem thing. There's a much deeper thing going on. Even in the political world, there's a uniparty. We clearly understand that now. And that uniparty often acts in the antithesis of the interests of average Americans. And you look at these things and you're like, there's something deeper happening here that's controlling you because this mm-hmm. isn't, this is so different than anything we've ever seen before.
Well, as a Christian, I'm sure you believe that the spiritual warfare aspect of it isn't new. And that's
absolutely.
Always been the case throughout human history. But why do you think it seems to be getting more intense, more noticeable in our daily lives?
I think that's it. It's that it's more blatant. It's more out in the open. And there was a time
that
it was.
Is it like an invitation for us to somehow participate?
My personal belief is yes. My personal belief is that any time that you're confronted with evil, it's your duty to stand against
right.
it.
Right.
So is it Revelation? Or
yep.
Revelation?
Yes. Revelation.
Yeah, Revelation.
Yep. Revelation.
End of days?
Yep.
Mm. Is that what's going on?
A lot of people have different views in terms of where we're at in history. I have no idea, but I will say that there is a very clear message communicated through the scriptures that as time goes on, things will become more blatant. In fact, there's a scripture that talks about how in the last days, everything's going to be uprooted related to identity. Mm. People exchange truth for lies, and they'll listen to things that'll make their ears tickle and deny reality. And so it's like, who knows? But that seems like a lot.
But also, it will come in like a thief of in the night. Mm-hmm. Therefore,
yeah, you really can't know the day or the hour.
Yeah.
So both of you are Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, I suppose, is it preferable that we are in the end of days and something is culminating as to your faith, or would it be preferable that life was just simple and normal and you were farming corn with a smile on your face?
Great question.
I think you can have both. Life is simple, and you can have normalcy, but also not be excited for the end times, but have hope, you know? And not be so prideful as to think you know what the timing is.
Because I think about this in a more secular context, but also a religious context. And I'm imagining, you know, are there people who are excited for Revelation, for the end of days, for the second coming, for the rapture, or whatever might be happening. Mm. And if you separate the faith element from that, are there people who think, in reality, we could choose to be happy, live on a farm and have pigs and chickens and food. But many of these people would prefer the chaos and the violence because they believe at the end of that violence is the utopia.
Yeah, the good news.
There are a lot of people who, I think at least, who want to make things worse as quickly and as intensely as possible so that it culminates in something. And I don't know what that will be.
Accelerationism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think, you know, the Bible's pretty clear about this. Like, there's the Apostle Paul that says that we should pray for peaceful and quiet lives, and yet his also message, and it's not a contradictory one, but his tethered message is, and also prepare for what's coming.
Yes.
So there's this tethered reality of, like, pray for peace and quiet, and do whatever you can to make that happen. Also, you need to be prepared.
Prepare for war, because
there will be a reality. The world is delving into chaos, and you want to be ready when that comes. And so I think it's that dichotomy.
A very literal example of that is that every 20, 30, 40,000 years, we get hit by comets, and everything gets wiped to zero. And, like, that's been happening over the last hundreds of thousands of years in the geological records of cometary impact. So, like, yeah, you want to live in peace and love your neighbor.
What is the last record of that happening?
Well, I know 12,800 years ago at the end of the Younger Dryas, a comet shattered over North America and peppered the glacial continent, melted all the ice, and just caused a global flood, wiped out all the megafauna in North America, flattened the United States, which is why we have these plains. Yeah.
Maybe that's the Great Flood.
Yeah.
Then, no, it was a few thousand years later, there was another flood, which they think was Noah's flood, like 6,000 years ago.
Yeah. That mythology goes cross cultures.
That's right.
Every culture has like a flood, right? Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. A great flood story.
Jeez.
But you are spot on. Like, there are these things that'll come that there's no ability to control. And no matter how powerful the cabal or multiple cabals are, like, even they will be taken off guard.
Yeah, I think when you were asking that question earlier about why does it seem like it's all coming to a head right now, the spiritual war, I find that it's always is, but now, because of the introduction of psychedelics into the mainstream and the proliferation of the knowledge through the internet, people are sensing it. I can feel it. I was like a logic, if I can't see it and prove it, I don't believe it. That was me until I was 23 years old. Now I feel energy. I see patterns because of THC and the marijuana, psilocybin. Just when you start to see the difference between life and non-life very starkly, and you start to practice Reiki and things like that, or Reiki, I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's necessary to understand what's happening.
That may be true, Ian. But I believe I have a story which shows us a sign. It is the end of times.
It is indeed, yes.
From the AP. Ex-Ohio court mediator arrested. Allegedly sent feces to GOP. Please.
Okay, please explain.
Please don't do this.
Don't.
Richard Steinle, a 77-year-old from Mogador, Ohio, former Portage County Common Pleas Court mediator, charged with sending injurious articles as non-mailable, violating federal law that prohibits mailing certain things, including hazardous materials, according to court records. It carries a maximum prison sentence of 1 year and a $100,000 fine. People have lost their minds.
That's disgusting.
Now, I do think stuff like this probably happened all the time with people doing weird stuff. There was also this video of some woman mailing her period, I guess, to, like, the Supreme Court.
Right, Roe.
Now, here's the funny thing. She may have staged it because she films a video and then it's like it jump cuts around. And she may be thinking, like, I want to actually do it.
That's gross.
But by making that video, what she doesn't understand is that you'll still get charged.
Yeah.
There were people when
that's a bioweapon. Yes.
Well, it doesn't matter if you mailed it. If you show yourself doing something that implies you did, they have to go and check every mailbox. And they have to, like, search for it. There was that story of the woman who licked the ice cream in the store and put it back.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, but she bought it right after. And it's like, it doesn't matter.
Did she, though?
No one knows that. They saw a video of her licking it, putting it back, and now they have to come and throw all of the ice cream away because it's contaminated. So this guy, we're going to have to throw away the entire GOP. They've all been contaminated.
Start over.
It's a white pill.
You know what? I've heard about poop. It's not the poop that's bad for you. It's the stuff that grows on the poop.
Oh, gosh.
Yep. I'm not sure.
It's
bacteria.
It all feels bad for
putrefactive bacteria.
I don't want any of it thrown at me.
Yeah, putrescine and cadaverine.
Yeah.
Interesting molecules.
You know what is sad, though? What did they say the fine is in here? 100,000?
Yeah.
Okay. What's sad is, like, knowing today's modern left, that will be covered in a GoFundMe.
Oh, I'm sure.
Okay. Speaking of feces, I have received confirmation of the tilapia. It says tilapia in the wild feed on algae, but on farms they're reared on corn or soybean meal. However, when no other feed is provided, they will eat poop. There have been instances where fish farms in Asia were found to be feeding poultry, sheep, or hog manure to tilapia.
Oh,
oh
no.
Wow.
Cool.
That's apparently is true.
Disgusting.
What is this? McGill University, tilapia and the poop connection.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Is that what you were reading?
Yeah.
That's so disgusting. Very.
Unscrupulous operations, apparently.
Ooh, yeah.
As in farms that ran on corn, however, the no feed is provided, they will eat poop. Hmm. There have been instances where fish farms in Asia were found to be feeding poultry, sheep, or hog manure to tilapia.
Oh, gross.
What? Do you guys know about gutter oil?
No. Yeah.
Wait. Why is this vaguely familiar?
I think it was like a viral video a long time ago. In China, they scoop out sewage and they filter the oils out and then cook with it.
Oh no.
On the street.
Oh, no.
Oh,
yeah.
But because they're cooking it, does that mean it's not like infectious anymore?
Well, infectious isn't the issue. The issue is are you eating food? Mm. It's like, is the oil mineral oil or like what oil is it?
Yeah.
They scoop things out of like
what is it? What is it?
Yeah, like not all oil is food.
It's the oil that people ate before. Yeah.
Maybe whether spiritual or not, this is like a sign of the end of days. Mm. When we're at the point where we're recycling manure from animals to feed fish because we need food to sell, maybe it's like, you know,
rather than to feed soil.
We've gone too far. It's time to turn back.
Yep.
Go back to the good corn harvesting.
Yes.
There you go.
Come on, Seifert.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It's our time to shine.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that the pro on this, the beautiful nature of the times that we're living in is that people are waking up and in turn pursuing a lot of things that help them prepare for the whatever days that we're in, also help them fight back. Those that really feel convicted to stand up, like they have more resources than ever. The good news is that we're in a time where I'll give a perfectly relevant example to what we're doing on our platform on Public Square, publicsq.com. If you want to check it out, there's a group called Front Yard Farms. There's like a community group where all these people, and it's one of our most popular groups on the app right now, because it's all these users that are coming in together that want to learn how to grow their own food, and it's grown by the thousands in the past few weeks, and that's really neat because what it shows to me is like, okay, there's really an ownership that individuals are taking over their own existence. They are trying to prepare themselves for whatever is coming. And worst case scenario, they'll need it. They'll need to learn how to be completely self-sustaining because the world will go so crazy. In the United States, the American experiment, as we know it today, does not exist in 20 years like what we're seeing. The best case scenario is now you know how to grow tomatoes in your backyard. Mm-hmm. And good for you. You took ownership of your own destiny and you actually provided for your family. That's amazing.
And when you pull a tomato off the vine and bite into it.
Nothing better.
Oh, yeah. Cherry tomatoes. We had cherry tomatoes growing every morning. I'd go out. I'd get fresh eggs from the chickens.
Oh, gosh.
Cherry tomatoes and peppers. And that was my breakfast.
Come on.
But we learned the hard way. We planted all of our tomatoes at once.
Too many tomatoes.
You don't do. Because then all of a sudden one day we had like 50 tomatoes and we couldn't eat them. You're supposed to plant one, wait a week, plant one, wait
or
a week.
Or can
you know.
Them, yeah.
Or can them.
I don't think we're in the end days. That phrase comes up sometimes. But for every one of us, these are the final days because this is our life.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
There will always be an end to our life. So every individual can talk about it as if this is the end because you only have this life.
But we mean kind of like the end of this era.
Yeah.
You know,
because I actually don't think we're in the end of time either. My own personal views. I think we're at the end of an era that the world has looked a certain way, and it's about to change.
The end of engine, industrial revolution.
I did hear this. It may not be true, but this is the dawning of the Age of Aquarius.
Oh,
yeah.
Well,
2230, I think, is when that begins.
The dawning of the Age of Aquarius. That's right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Let the sun shine in, you know.
We're going to be tapping the vacuum for energy. Dude, do you guys know seed bombing? You ever heard of seed bombing?
No.
They retrofit C-60 bomber planes.
Oh, yeah.
And they pack them with seeds. Like tree saplings, and they fly over like deforested areas and just drop hundreds, millions of seeds. Okay. They don't plant nearly as well as doing them by hand, but they can drop magnitudes more of them. And they said they can plant like a billion trees per day.
That's
wow.
Levels of terraforming.
It's going to be funny when in like 30 years, they're like, we got to cut trees down. There's just too many. There's no more carbon dioxide.
They're competing with us for the carbon. We need the carbon.
Yeah.
Dude, we're going to be able to mine and burn carbon and then grow trees.
Remember
we're gonna do it on Mars.
Remember when they said to not use paper bags because it was bad for the forest and to use plastic? When I was a kid, that was the big thing. Yeah, they were like, stop using paper bags. They're tearing the forest down. Use plastic. Then like they were like, stop using the plastic bags. Start using the paper bags. They're getting pollution everywhere. And it's it's like for every problem you think you're solving, you're making a new one.
Well, that's a great point because San Diego actually was a national case study, which is where I live, San Diego, A few years ago, they made plastic bags illegal formally at the city level in San Diego. And what ended up happening is that the trash that homeless people would leave on the streets in San Diego got exponentially worse. And not just trash, but also like their own human fecal matter. And we tried to figure out why. Like, why on earth is the trash just so exponentially greater than it was even 6 to 9 months ago? And they tied it back to that policy. What used to happen is that homeless people would put their trash and their feces in these plastic bags and would throw it away. Mm. But now you have the scenario where you took away their access to plastic bags, and so the alternative is that we have trash and feces flooding the streets.
Wow.
And so you don't realize with foresight how these decisions are going to impact you 10 years down the road. Solar panels is another perfect example. You guys have Michael Shell Schellenberger on. Huge fan of Michael. Read Apocalypse Never if you never have. Fantastic book. But Michael talks about this all the time. They, when they go and recycle these solar panels, they go and put them in impoverished communities in Africa and the land, and then it pollutes water supplies. Like, we don't think about how the windmills will affect eagle populations. We don't. So you think you're helping something, and in turn, you're actually causing a really detrimental effect.
Yeah, I was telling you before, I've been working with this company that pulls carbon dioxide out of the air and then converts it into graphene. And it, the problem that can come out of that is that we start pulling too much carbon out of the air, and then we start killing off all the plant life. But thank God I thought of that now. Hopefully, you know, we'll be able to mediate and make sure that that isn't a problem that is created from the mining.
I think it was funny we mentioned the other day when the wind turbine started leaking oil.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, huh? What do you mean?
Yeah.
It's like they use oil.
I thought
oil.
They don't do that.
Oil, yeah.
Yeah, they need oil. They got to lubricate it, man.
Yeah. And not just to maintain them, but to produce them in the first place.
This is the challenge with... I don't know how you solve our political issues. We have a great government. I mean, not literally today. I mean, a system of government was devised by the founding fathers, which is quite brilliant, but has devolved into some chaotic nightmare. And what happens is you get a politician who's like, doing stuff is hard. Saying things is easy.
That's right.
And so they're like, we gotta have green. You know, green is better than brown or gray or whatever the cities are supposed to look like. They want the green initiatives, not the machine initiatives. And then, what ends up happening is they say, we're gonna build wind turbines. And everyone says, that sounds good. And then it costs more to do.
Does
the return
nice.
is insufficient. And then people think they're doing better, but they're just spending money. Cars is a good example. One theory going on right now is that the big push for electric vehicles is simply because they're trying to save the auto industry. Mm. A huge portion of the U.S. economy is based on cars. People don't buy cars anymore. There's too many. There's so many cars, and they're getting better and better, and they last longer, and people drive less. Like, what do you do? Electric vehicles. Now we're going to get rid of all the gas ones and go all electric. That's convenient because it helps keep the gas for, you know, machinery and things like that, that, you know, more industrial use cases. But I think it's likely a big component is just make electric cars, because now everybody's buying up all the electric cars, and they're hard to come by, and there's huge demand. Yeah. Economics.
Yep.
Not environmentalism. Mm.
Yep.
So maybe the end of days?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, I was just going to say one more thing on that. I think part of you asked a question in that, and the question was, how do we fix the system when the system is so broken in what seems like an irreparably, almost like you just can't even, there's no point in even trying. And my big message to people all the time is go local first. Mm. Start at the local level. Like, I can't change my country until I change my state. I can't change my state until I change my county. I can't change my county until I change my city. It all starts in my backyard. Like, if we can actually stand up for the needs of a local community and get that down and get that on lock, okay, then we can start to focus on our state.
That's like what Public Square is, the app that you built.
It's the whole goal.
What is it like? It's like Craigslist, but more like, more vetted?
Yeah, so it's essentially, we started a platform to help connect freedom-loving Americans with the community and companies that share their values. So we've been really disheartened by woke corporatism. A big part of our system being broken is that mega corporations have gone kind of into the progressive authoritarian world and partner with big government in this effort to kind of stamp out the small business world and also the values that still tens of millions of Americans hold dear, like individual liberties, freedom, prosperity. And this has been evolving over the course of the last few years, and then COVID blew it up because you had businesses all of a sudden literally bar you from employment or even patronizing their place of business unless you agreed with their set of values related to certain medical choices. And so we started this app that basically helps people take local communities back through the power of localized commerce. And so it's a social marketplace where users can connect for free with all the businesses that have agreed to a set of values to basically say we're going to stand for the rights and principles that have made our country special in the first place. Then they get discounts for going there.
Yes.
And a lot of these businesses.
So you mentioned the seven principles. You want to explain what those are? Those sounded great.
Yeah, so when a business comes on, it's free for the business to join. Right now we've got about 100 new businesses that are joining every single day, and they're loving the experience because it's a great advertising source for them for free. So we don't charge businesses, we don't charge users. We make our money through advertising that we don't have to sell user data for, which is a big point. In fact, if you go to our homepage, you'll see a transparency page at the bottom of this. So if you scroll all the way down, you'll see a little transparency link at the bottom. This actually has our core values, and then it also, if you scroll down even farther, has the kind of tenets of our platform that you know that you can trust as a user and as a business. But when a business signs up, they agree with seven values that are essentially at a high level. We believe the Constitution is worth protecting. We believe in the rights of every individual in the public square, especially related to health things, so no mask or vaccine mandates. If a business is on this app, it means that they will respect your personal choices in that world. These businesses don't donate to any intersectional politics, meaning they're not going to... Yelp has a big problem. Yelp last year came out and gave free advertising to black-owned businesses.
Wow.
At the expense of everyone else.
Isn't that illegal?
It's 1964 violation of the Civil Act, Civil Rights Act, to a T.
Would that be Title VII, I believe? Racial discrimination.
Know. Yeah. I'm not sure, yeah. Yeah. Especially as it relates to even employment. I mean, that's happening in a big way right now. So, a business that's on the platform is not going to identify themselves by their skin color. They're going to identify themselves by the quality of the products that they produce for their consumers. Bringing this back to, supporting the free market of small businesses to be able to operate with as little government intervention as possible, which is big in a state like California where it's impossible to start a small business.
People need to share this. PublicSQ.com because if, you know, we often talk about don't give your money to people who hate you. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeremy's Razor said that funny line, stop giving money to money to people that hate you, give it to me instead.
Right.
Yeah. But
transparent. Yeah. I love it.
But how do you find more people like, you know, Jeremy Boring or the Daily Wire?
Yeah.
Like this.
Yeah.
So if you live in an area and you're like, I don't know what to do, well, here's one way to look up. And if at the end of the day, you are avoiding woke businesses and only going to people who, you know, share your values, then you are shifting a massive portion of the economy and power into better values.
You're spot on. And like this shirt, it's a great example. I'm wearing a shirt called Rowan, forrowan.com. It's amazing. They didn't pay me to say this. They're not even a paid advertiser. But forrowan.com, they're on the app with a free profile. This shirt, source their products sustainably. They're an amazing company run by a guy that holds these values to his core convictions. It's his worldview to a T. 1% of all the proceeds that they make off of their clothing go to fatherhood. So there's this National Fatherhood Initiative that helps to provide father figures for communities where kids didn't have them. It's like, these are the companies that I want to support with my dollars, not things that are donating to BLM with their corporate profits. And what's neat is that, you know, we have 15,000 businesses on the platform. We're the largest network of these patriotic businesses in the country. And the largest industries are restaurants, retail, clothing and jewelry. It's small businesses that make our country special. Because not only is there like a, yeah, let's be anti-woke, but there's also like a, let's just support small businesses in general, because they've been so hosed by what's happened over the past few years. The fact that Amazon gained in value over the last 2 years, while small businesses are now in a situation where 70% of them in the United States may not be able to stay open after this fall because of how hard they've been hit, like that to me is one of the greatest crimes against humanity I've ever witnessed. And so we're trying to support not only the businesses that share our core convictions so that we're not funding companies that hate us, we're also trying to help just small business in general because there's a need for it now today more than ever.
What about a company that's in a jurisdiction that mandates things?
These businesses stand against it. In fact, we've paid the legal fees of businesses
so
that have stood against
it. Unconstitutional orders.
You're from Chicago originally? Yeah, Nini's Deli. Great deli. Highly recommend if you're in the Chicago area. They're one of our promoted partners. They're amazing on the app. And they stood against the mandates Chicago, which was nearly impossible.
Yeah.
They refused. They said the rights of our consumers are too important. We're not going to infringe upon them. And they got fined. But we put together a group that went and paid off their legal funds and said, keep fighting the fight. Don't back down.
You mentioned that you want to open source the code at some point. Yep. What's your timetable for that?
Great question. The desire would be in the next 12 months, but it's really hit or miss. It relies upon a few features getting done and us getting more algorithmic-based where there's anything that you'd want to be able to use in different environments. So that's a great question.
Like, I could see, like, an Airbnb, all the people that are Airbnb-ing their houses also using an app like this, but not your app, because it would set up, it would create new liabilities for you if you get into those markets, but that if someone else spun up like a public square V2 or like a, you know, whatever you want to call it, with that code, and then you'd have like a B, and you'd have like a like, do you have rentals, like Airbnb on there?
Yeah, we have housing rentals. So a lot of people have said, hey, I wasn't a huge fan of how Airbnb came out and contributed dollars to employees getting abortions across state lines, because that was a big initiative that Airbnb pulled about 2 weeks ago. And so we had a lot of rentals on the app that said, hey, we're here. Don't forget about us. We're not with Airbnb. Come join us and we'll gladly rent your house. So there's absolutely, there's an incredible market for also like local bartering. So people that have just a single product that they're trying to sell at a local region, that's great for them too. If you're in an area that's super rural and there's not a ton of traffic, we just launched this nationwide 6 weeks ago. So we're enjoying it and diving right in. But it's been amazing, the response thus far. One of the greatest challenges is how do you make this critical mass enough for people in hyper-local communities that are way out in the middle of nowhere? Part of the way that we do that is also offering an online marketplace. So you can also shop your values in the online setting and can spend money with the businesses there that are agreeing with these seven values, but they'll serve you wherever you're at in the country. And so, but you're right. In terms of how this can have cross-functional applicability into other environments, the sky's the limit.
Is it the kind of thing where I can order like food from the restaurant through your app?
Not yet. You'll be able to.
That's
absolutely
awesome.
Yeah. Essentially, it's a directory at the moment, with a social component, but it will absolutely. I mean, you should see where we're going. This fall, we're starting to get more into e-commerce. You can actually purchase right there and have it shipped to your house from within the app itself. Right now, we essentially act as a directory to get you to the businesses where then you conduct and your shopping experience. And a lot of these companies will give you a discount code for shopping there. That's the neat thing too, is that me as a free user, I get a free cup of coffee every week from a Public Square coffee shop. So it's really neat.
I just signed up and I'm looking at the local area and there's a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
I just signed up.
There's a barbecue place in, well, I won't say the city, but there's a barbecue place near here.
Oh, cool.
Run by great people.
Awesome.
Highly recommend. Check it out. For this.
What's the name of it? Do you have the name of it?
I'll say after the show. Yeah, yeah, I don't know if you guys are sensitive about where you're
shout up.
It's very close.
Wow. There's a lot of businesses in here.
Really? In the local?
In local.
That's great. Check online because there's, but that's great news because we're in a pretty rural area.
So when I look on the map,
yep,
and it shows all the little squares,
pins. Yep,
the pins.
All those businesses have agreed with those.
There's a ton.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they've come through.
Is there ride sharing?
Not yet, but that's something we're super excited about.
That's hot.
Yeah, we can't wait to it because it's super easy to do. The technology's there. Yeah, ride sharing's big. Bartering's huge for us. A lot of these, like moving into the Craigslist, the Angie's World or Angie's List market becomes more of a reality in the near future. We're excited about what's coming.
What's Angie's List?
T-Dog's Barbecue.
Yes.
In Charlestown.
Yes.
Oh, is that the place you were talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, they're on there.
Yeah, there's another cafe that's there I went to today. Pretty cool.
That's
everyone, you got to understand, this is MAGA country.
Good point.
Yeah,
good point.
True. Yeah.
Jesse Smollett would agree.
Yeah,
but you guys would be amazed.
Chicago is MAGA country.
I mean, the reality is
the job board. Do you want this to compete with LinkedIn or something like that?
Great question. Yeah. So that came about really as a sort of a fluke. We had a lot of businesses during around the time that the vaccine mandates were coming out. We had a lot of businesses like, "Hey, I'm hiring, and I won't infringe upon people's rights. Hmm. Can you just put that somewhere?" And we've had a lot of people get hired through it. And we've got an amazing partner in the job board space called Red Balloon that's helping do kind of what we're doing, but in the jobs market more exclusively. That's really exciting. Andrew, their CEO, is a good friend of mine, and so we're partnering together on a lot of our technology.
So two things here.
Yep.
First of all, I remember I tried to download your app earlier before it was rolled out everywhere. I was very disappointed that it was available everywhere. I'm very glad it's available now. The other thing is Red Balloon, I looked at, and they appeared to be defunct, which was very disheartening. So do you know if they're expanding as well?
They are definitely expanding.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
Yes.
And then what is the biggest roadblock you foresee for your company?
It's a great question. The biggest roadblock is just to be honest, we've got a lean budget and a lot of interest, which is great news. Like, it's great that we're the largest entity in this space, and praise God, we've had a lot of success thus far, and that's solely because these businesses have taken a stand, and we're grateful for it.
That's so exciting.
But, like, that also creates a lot of challenges, because now we're building the plane in flight. And so anytime you're building the plane in flight, there are just challenges with the thing staying together and holding fast. Yeah. But if you go to, like, a city like Chicago, you'll be amazed at the amount of businesses. We have 1,000 businesses in Chicago. Like, Tim, if you're up there and you search that current location bar, X out there, go back. Okay, hit the current location bar. See the current location right above you?
Oh, up.
The little red bar.
What? I'm see not going it? To press that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, no. That won't show your current location.
Oh.
It's going to be a search bar. See, this is one of the things we're changing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
If you go to that current location bar and you search, you don't have to do it now, but if you search Chicago there instead of your current location, I just want to show you an example of like a largely blue city that has just blown up. Chicago, Atlanta, Phoenix, San Francisco's done pretty well. New York City
is so
awesome.
Great.
Yeah, if you scroll over to Chicago, oh, hey, Detroit, what's up?
Hey, yeah.
If you scroll over to Chicago and then you hit search this area, just so you can see like what a city looks like when it really blows up.
I'm going to go check out my neighborhood. I love Chicago.
See here. Let's see how we're looking.
So scroll up. Okay, now hit search this area. Let's see.
There you go.
Hey. That's great.
Oh, my gosh. Look at that. Yeah.
And these are just local ones, so these don't count all the online that service this area.
This is so cool.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Wow. It seems like a great way to help people feel like they're not alone, too.
That's the whole goal.
Are you looking for investment at this stage?
So we've taken just angel investment. We're staying away from all venture stuff. It robs you of a lot.
This is amazing.
Thanks, dude.
So I'm in my old neighborhood in Chicago.
Where are you at? Oh, you're right by Midway.
And so the fact that you can find businesses that share your values in a place as blue and insane as the South Side of Chicago is
really indicates that the blue and red thing is kind of a visage.
It is.
People are people.
Well, I mean,
we love our
bro. If I like, I'm going to use this and go to these businesses.
You should, bro.
100%,
I don't want to give money to people who hate me.
Amen. That's why we exist.
Yeah,
and the deeper emotional connection is, I feel not alone. Like we had. It'll almost make me tear up when I talk 100%. About it. We had a lady reach out. We'd only been launched a month, and she said, we soft launched in San Diego, and she reached out and she said, I feel like I have 6,000 new best friends in my neighborhood.
That was
really, really cool, because it was like, it's amazing to be able to shop your values, stop spending money from companies that hate you, go for all of your life's purchases and feel good about your purchases. It's a whole nother thing when you can feel like I'm not alone anymore. And
when I look at an area in the South Burbs of Chicago, and you see a cluster, you know these people are all friends.
Mm-hmm.
They told each other like
they absolutely are.
Yeah. They're probably getting customers.
And part of the way we grow is through an ambassador program. So like we have an amazing Chicago ambassador. And so the Chicago ambassador goes out and refers all these businesses to the platform, recommends them to the platform. It's really neat. And so that's part of the way we grow. It's very grassroots. We have a team of activists around the country.
Literally a parallel economy. That's the whole goal.
Great.
How do you vet the companies? Like if someone did do vax mandates, how would you vet that?
So we've had two instances since we launched, at all, even including our soft launch back last October. We had two instances where a user reached out and was like, hey, I think this business may have been with you at a time, but no longer is. They just let us know and we kept moving on. So we pulled them off. And off we go.
Okay.
Yeah. We're committed to the rights of our consumers though. And so if a business is on there and they got to be with us, and it's not a tribalistic thing. It's just that there's a constitution in place for a reason. We want these businesses to respect that. And consumers deserve to know that I'm not going to go. I remember how embarrassing it was, like COVID. I walked into a coffee shop and got told to leave right away because I wasn't wearing a mask. Like, that's embarrassing. There are a lot of people in there. The last thing we'd ever want to have happen is a consumer feels that way. And so, that's why we really do hold fast to these values.
So how do you kind of not enforce, but encourage people to adhere to these rules? Because you're right, these are great principles, but how do you make sure that they're following through even like 1 year, 2 years, 5 years
for
later?
Sure. Great question. We ask for consumer feedback on every interaction. That's a really helpful way. So if a user shops somewhere, we ask them to let us know how their experience was. And you know, again, 99.99999% of those interactions are incredibly positive. We learn new stories through it.
That's so great.
But it's everything too. It's random industries. Like we had a office supplier from Alabama join last week. He heard me on this TV show and he said, hey, I just want to let you know. He called me because I hadn't talked to him in 8 years, but I know this guy personally. He didn't know what I was doing now. He calls me and said, I just want to let you know, within 24 hours of being on the platform, I had an office in Ohio call me for supplies from Alabama, and they're my new client.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're one of our largest clients. So it's really neat to see, like, even the way businesses are now supporting businesses, and that's cool. Like, the B2B side of this is limitless, too. So we're excited to get into that a little bit more.
You said earlier it's
ad revenue is how you make the company makes money right now, but you don't track any data.
We don't sell any user data, and any data we track is purely analytical. And it's not based to a user, so it's basically we can tell a business you got 8,000 impressions this month, but we can't tell you demographics, who did it,
right,
the gender, any of that. We don't even ask users that.
I guess it wouldn't be untargeted ads. The ads are targeted to people that like the business of.
They're targeted to the entire platform. Like, we don't have any ability to target other than your region, so we can tell you. Chicago, you get an ad that runs in Chicago, but we can't tell you to what demographics or what.
But if someone browses a lot of restaurants, do they get restaurant ads?
No, not yet. No. Okay. And even when that comes in, it'll be user preference driven. It won't be a hidden algorithm. So what'll happen in the near future in the beauty of building the plane in flight, what'll happen in the near future is that when a user signs on, they'll actually tell us what they're most interested in. So I really like restaurants. I really like coffee shops. I really like clothing companies. I really like graphene. And then what'll happen is that what you'll see will be most catered to what you told us, but you can change that at any time.
Other categories? Can I say show me restaurants?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, maybe. So if you scroll down.
I'm totally doing this tomorrow for dinner or something.
So if you scroll down... you'll see categories. Oh, cool. So you get into all categories. So that's in Chicago and that little region. If you go to shop online, you'll see there's a whole list of categories. If you scroll down, you'll see all these different ones. If you want jewelry, if you want clothing, you want retail, you want tech services.
You have made it very easy to stop giving money to people who hate us.
That is music to my ears. Yeah. That's great news. I'm very glad to hear
that. It's not just about not giving money to people who hate you. It's about giving money to people who like you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big time.
That is what it's about. And it's impressive you did it with a small team.
Thank you.
Like you said, it was just a couple of you started it off.
And we're now at about 24 people on our headcount.
Oh, that's impressive.
So thank you. Thank you. It's been a lot, but it's been... incredible.
That's in a year. Was that in a year you went from
two
to 24
people? Yeah, we wrote
our first
line of code 13 months ago.
That's so neat.
Wow. Did you just get struck with the idea?
Yeah, we needed it. I have a lot of respect for business owners that start entrepreneurial ventures because they see a hole in the market. There's a whole nother level of fulfillment when it's something you personally have felt. And my wife and I, we felt the COVID thing hard. I mean, we just felt so disheartened by what was happening. We made a list of all the businesses in our local region on a piece of paper that we knew we could support because we knew the owners. We knew they would stand with us. So it came out of a lot of personal experiences, the desire to feel connected to people and not alone. Because you can feel that way, especially in California. And so
what about businesses that might be services with no physical location, right?
Yep. Those are on there too. Plumbers, electricians, financial advisors. We got it all.
Would that pop up on the map, or what if they have no
address? They'll pop up on the map if they have at least a focal point that they like
an
to service.
Address. Yep. Okay.
But then they'll also pop up in the category list without maybe necessarily a physical pin on the map if they have a surface area but no physical location. It's really neat.
Wow.
That's so cool.
Is there
cool.
A woke version of this? They have that, don't they?
Yelp.
Yeah. All of them. Yeah. Everything
Next door,
else.
Yelp.
Yeah. All of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But you're right, though. It is for us, we get asked all the time, why won't you create this big blacklist and tell me all the companies I should hate? And it's because that's evident. That's out there. We'd much rather focus on the positive. Here's where you should go. It does me no good to tell you. It does you some good. Knowledge is power. But Chase and Bank of America don't like you. What I would rather do is tell you about Access, which is an incredible freedom-loving bank that holds fast to the Constitution, and they'll serve you anywhere around the country. Access Bank. AXOS.
Great.
Check them out. They're amazing. AXOS. They're based out of San Diego.
AXOS.
Yep. Clothing companies like Ferroen. I'd rather tell you about this because it's hopeful. It gives you hope in the country.
I'm not a big fan of the don't give money to people that hate you because I don't think they hate you. They just don't care about you.
I'd rather give money to people that like you.
Yes, and support your ideals.
Yep, exactly. That's why we exist.
I'd rather give more money to somebody, serving food who was cool and was nice and supported what I supported as opposed to literally anybody else.
To what Ian said, I think there are a lot of business owners who, if they knew your political leanings, would kick you out of their businesses. So there are ideologues out there, and when I walk into a business that has BLM flags and... the newest updated LGBT flags everywhere, all over the walls, more than their own branding. I do think that it's meant to deter anyone who's not woke from entering the business and supporting it.
Yeah.
There might be something to that.
Yeah. And on our vacation, it was terribly sad because I had somebody say to us, if I had known that you weren't vaccinated, I wouldn't have invited you. And I was crushed. Wow. I was
crazy.
It's horrible.
They're locked in. Weird mind state, man.
And that's what Tim talks about, the cult. And I wanted to say, in October of last year, we were talking to this big crowd of people we had at our little event. And I was like, you know what? You guys should feel great about this because this tells you that you're not alone. Yeah. Like, this is something really impactful. And I feel like this app is the perfect representation of that.
Thank you.
So exciting. Yeah.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah. I'm stoked.
We do what we do.
I love it.
Do you have venues on here? Like,
oh, yeah. We have a really cool art collective venue that just joined from San Diego. Highly recommend. I can't even remember their name, but if you look in venues in San Diego, we have a music venue in Indiana that just joined. Like, really cool. Yeah, it's so awesome. Fun. Yeah, because that was a big thing. During COVID, there was a big vaccination push for music venues, and some bands required it, not even because of their personal convictions, but because the venue required it. And so we wanted to kind of counteract that as well.
Those venues also need to let some comedians know who's right? allowed.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for
yes.
sure.
Yes, big time.
Yeah. We're going to go to Super Chats. It's if you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show if you really do like it, and become a member at TimCast.com. We're going to have that members-only show coming up for you at 11 p.m., but let's read. I'm going to have to keep this one short from Eric. Just read the beginning. He says, Tim, you're right about the Civil War. And he says he hopes people prepare for what's
yes,
coming.
Yes, yes.
I often tell people just preparation is being sustainable, figuring out what you need to survive and not relying on a machine or a system because you don't know what's going to happen. That's all I can really say. I don't know what else preparation would really mean because no one knows what will happen. We may be in an era of purely fifth generational warfare. It's all psychological operations. And that's it. But we may end up seeing something like supply chain disruption. So preparation just literally means, do you know where your dinner is coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Download on your phones a survival guide, not because the world is ending, but because some days you might find yourself lost in the woods.
Yeah.
That's it. You might want to learn how to start a fire or something if you're going to have a campfire with your friends.
Might not have coverage.
I just got That's notified right. that the app Public Square might actually be overloaded right now.
People aren't able to sign in.
They get to the phone number part, and then it kicks them back.
Yep. They can skip the phone number part if you'd like to. There's a skip for now. That can sometimes help. I figured that this would probably be a large traffic spike. If you give it a minute,
all
it'll
devs
alert.
We do this
all
the time.
Yes, all devs are on alert. They're handling it. We've got an amazing team.
Yeah, I wish I knew about this sooner. Legit, when we go out on the weekends and stuff, I'm only using
amazing.
These businesses.
Oh, for
hands
sure.
Hands down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
It was so, I got to say, it was awesome to go to Chicago and look at my neighborhood and see that there are businesses there. And it's like very few, you know, surprisingly. I mean, there's a lot there you can see on the map.
Totally.
But not as many as you'd hope for. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's Chicago. What do you expect?
Well, and we just launched. I mean, we've only been nationwide for 6 weeks. So part of that is like it's such once communities find out about it and then the businesses start telling their friends, like that's what's led to blossom and growth.
This is so great.
Thanks,
yeah.
guys.
I had friends who worked at places that got fake ratings on Yelp and things like that.
Oh, dude.
I knew a guy who ran a burger joint, and he said that he would get these fake reviews on Yelp, and then all of the good reviews would be held as spam, and all the bad reviews would rise. And then you get a phone call being like, hey, why don't you advertise with us? And he'd be like, no, and then it would get worse.
Yep. Mm.
They'd be like, we can give you special editing access. I don't know if that's true. I just know that's what a guy told me,
wow.
to be fair.
It's real.
That's crazy.
And they'll help some businesses alleviate bad reviews, and they won't others based upon their political views.
That's shady.
Yeah. So like don't a lot of the businesses that have taken stances for anything remotely right of center, if they get a negative review from someone in New York that's clearly never been to their business in Phoenix, Yelp won't help you. Even if you're a paying client, and you have to pay a lot to Yelp to really be shown anywhere, like in any serious degree, like starting at $300. I mean, Yelp's an expensive platform for an advertiser. And so you have these advertisers that feel part of the community, and yet they get completely slapped in the face.
I feel like you guys should have a receipt in order to leave a review.
I think that's a good idea.
That's a great
idea. Yeah. You can scan it.
All right. Or maybe the receipt can go through the app. You know what you should do.
Ready. I'm all ideas.
Payment
build a plane with us.
Payment processor.
Damn, so, Gino.
So when people integrate that, so you know, you go to the store and they have the thing, the tablet, and they spin it around and you tap it and then you slide it back.
Yep.
The receipt stays within the app. Boom. There you go, man.
Love it.
All right. Slane Hope says, I think a 2-year mandatory military service would solve a lot of America's problems. It would correct bad parenting, lack of discipline, and addiction. I don't disagree, but I also agree that it would create a ton of new problems, and I'm not sure I would agree with conscription.
Yeah.
I like the idea of people getting discipline. I don't know if I like the idea of I don't think it can be implemented.
What about military school? People should have to serve 2 years of military school.
I don't know.
I mean, I wish that I had learned military tactics at the age of 17. You know, I love military tactics, and I don't know why, but I love them.
They're interesting. Well, then the question becomes, who is teaching those tactics? And it would probably be the state if you're going to give it to the military. That's not really what we want.
Well, and if the military is teaching the military schools, what they're teaching the military currently.
No
like,
good.
I would not let my kids go. Yeah.
Triton 54 says tomorrow's headline. AG Merrick Garland orders the arrest of conservative protesters outside Judge Reinhardt's home.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Except for the ones screaming to go do some crazy stuff.
No, yeah. Basically the point is they wouldn't do it to the Supreme Court justices. They wouldn't arrest the people outside their homes. But
right.
Yeah. All right. Augusto Mimochet says, the House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded that JFK was a conspiracy, and the next day, all the evidence used in the committee was stolen from CIA storage.
That's crazy.
Is that true or not?
You look that up.
Someone should fact check it.
I don't know. Well,
interesting if true.
It was definitely a conspiracy. We just don't know who conspired.
All right. Alex Maggiore says, I only know that Dan Bongino is the guy that posts that Biden is the worst president in U.S. history every day on Twitter. Maybe you can have him on IRL. I'm already a subscriber to Timcast, but maybe people should know him. He's a cool dude.
People do know him.
He is cool.
He's huge.
Yeah,
he's been really helpful to us, too.
What's that?
Bongino's been really helpful to us. He's promoted us a lot in the last month. Very grateful for
him. I have to say, I used to think he was crazy, and I do not anymore.
Did you hear his rant last night on the news after this broke about the FBI raiding Trump's place?
What did he say?
He called it some third world BS and just went off about how our country is a banana republic. I mean, yeah, you have the current president's son that's doing what he's doing, and yet the opposition leaders being raided. It's like, that's the most clear evident form of banana republics that you can possibly dream up.
I gotta look that up.
Yep, Dan was going off.
All right, let's grab some super chats. David C. Kronk Sr. says, do you think it's possible that the DNC knew this was in the works, so they funded MAGA candidates believing the raid would hurt them? Maybe.
4D chess?
Yeah, the idea is to make Trump look like he's culpable or something's going on. Yeah. I don't know, man.
I guess. I just find it hard. Like, I think this is firing up the base even further. I don't know who that person was on Twitter today that had the viral tweet where he was basically like, I was on the fence about Trump 2024, but if this turns out to not lead to anything and this is a witch hunt, like, I'm all in. He's got my vote. Yeah. I think there are going to be a lot of people that are like that solely because they are so frustrated at the establishment pulling yet another example of this tyranny.
All right, let's grab some super chits. Bobcat says, don't forget a president has unilateral authority to say if something isn't classified anymore. A secretary of state does not. So even if he had some red stickers, the law says he can. Is that true? Trump can just say it's not classified anymore?
I don't know. I think we talked about that. Was it before the show?
Before the show,
hearing that.
Like, if you want to be like, oh, all the Kennedy stuff, D-class. All the alien stuff, D-class. All the secret weapons, the CIA's, D-class. No. I mean, I can't imagine that would fly.
It may not fly because there are other powers at play, but I think it is legal.
Yeah.
I think you, as a president, can basically declassify anything you want. Because you're the commander-in-chief, you have the sole authority over issues of national security and classification. And so, and what's interesting is if you dig back even deeper, the last kind of modification to that classification rules and parameters was made by Obama in 2009, who basically made it way more lenient and vague. So, very interesting. But...
All right, Thorin Park says, Ian's shirt looks like it's made out of children's party napkins.
That's awesome.
Sure, it's that plastic tablecloth that you start tearing apart because you feel anxious.
Yeah, I think it would melt on a hot day.
Yeah, definitely.
Someone gave this to me.
I love it.
Aaron Freeman says, lest we not forget, they wanted Garland as a Supreme Court judge. They're going for broke now. Mm-hmm. How do we stop activist shenanigans this election? You got to go and tell literally every single person you know to vote.
True.
Every single one of them.
Also, fortify your life so that shenanigans aren't going to destroy it. You know, make a system that can withhold that kind of stuff, because that kind of stuff is always going to play out in reality.
You go, you call everyone in your phone book and you say, hey, you going to vote? You go knock on every single door, hey, you going to vote? And you get 10. Every person gets 10 of their friends and asks them, are you going to go vote? Mm-hmm. And go vote. Oh, this is important. Purposeful Porpoise says Trump had element 115 in his safe. The Zeta Reticulans will not stand for this.
Sounds like Bob Lazar.
Yeah, is that what he said?
Yeah, Zeta
like
Reticuli. I think when Bob was working at Area 51, that they told him that there was a Zeta Reticuli, there were little green men, and there was a special element 115. So it's like a red herring. So if Bob ever went rogue, that he would look like an idiot, because there is no Zeta Reticuli. There's no element 115. If there is, it's not what they were using. They put a puppet of an alien up in that drone that they were working on and made him think it was alien.
Wild.
Tavnazian says, quote, One of Trump's attorneys says they are not in possession of the warrant presented by the FBI prior to the search at Mar-a-Lago. They were allowed to see it, then it was taken away. That sounds strange. Hmm. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
All right. Mai Zhu Yang says, what if Biden and his party want Trump's idea of how to make America great, so they are stealing his documents by raiding? Oh, yeah, that's what it is. They want to make America great. Trump's going to win, so they're going to steal his plan. Yeah. All right. Jimmy Joe says, Kristallnacht was November 9th, shortly after the Reichstag fire. Interesting.
Wow. Very interesting. Mm.
Christopher Lambert, someone check Ian's dice. No one rolls that many 20s in a row naturally.
Well, you gotta, it's this one right here. I don't know if you can see from here. Someone 3D printed this. It's all 20s.
That's the one all he's rolling. 20s.
Oh, yeah. I saw someone in chat. I'm not saying that there is no element 115. There is. But what they told Bob at that time, they had not developed 115 yet. And they just gave him some random futuristic element that would be realized in the future. Now we have it.
Keith Fraser says, don't forget that JFK threatened to break the FBI into a million pieces. Is that true?
Wow. I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. I don't know if those are exact words, but yeah, he said he was going to shatter it into oblivion or something.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
It's a metaphor.
Well, and wasn't the conspiracy around it, like the week before he had premiered some sort of something that was going to lead to the shattering of some of these three-letter agencies. That's a big thing that always, you know, Joe Rogan's big on the timeline of events leading up to the assassination. And how was that JFK Revisited documentary that was really good 2 years ago? But
Oliver
talked
Stone?
About this too. Yeah, talked about kind of the timeline leading up to it. And apparently that's the story, is that he not only said that, but there was some actions in practice. And
splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces was the actual quote. Scatter it to the winds. Yeah, the CIA.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah. Let's see. H Music says Hillary didn't learn when she made her "Love Trump's Hate" campaign slogan. Only missing the apostrophe. So now she's trying, but her email instead. Do you guys remember that? I remember the first time I saw the signs "Love Trump's Hate," and I was like, "She wants me to love Trump?"
Yeah, I remember,
like,
being
his hatred or something. Like, I don't understand. Like, like you're saying Trump is hateful, and I should love his hatefulness.
I do love that hate.
And then someone explained to me, I went, "Oh, because the T was capitalized." I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I get what. Wow, these people are terrible.
I thought I should have checked that.
A good meme would be "Love Trumps." Just like get it, like when you trump something, it means you're like beating it, you're like one-upping it.
That's what
love
means.
Trumps. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I take that to mean it's like, do I love the Trumps? Is that what I'm supposed to?
I don't know. Yeah, think? I'm confused. Yeah. They tried to meme.
Yeah.
Andrew Ryan says, "A man chooses, a slave obeys."
Hmm. Oof. Oof. True.
Brian David says, "I am also left-handed with a recent left-hand injury. Also, my membership was automatically renewed via PayPal 2 days ago."
Oh, no.
Was that not supposed to happen, or?
Weren't we supposed to use parallel economy?
If people are signed up through PayPal, PayPal is just going to do their thing until they switch. Oh. But I can't say too much, but we're working on new infrastructure stuff, so I don't know. Yeah. But if you do want to support the show, we use parallel economy. So when you sign up for TimCast.com, you're not only supporting us, you're supporting Parallel Economy, which is a censorship-resistant financial transaction service, and our infrastructure is built on Rumble. So we very much are trying to help flourish and grow this ecosystem so that we can get away from the super
Super chats.
The super chats.
The super chats.
From the censorship.
We love super chats.
Danaverk says, "Ian, check out the Global Consciousness Project."
I know that. Global.
Sounds interesting.
Alex Ramazzi says, "Rudy Giuliani on Crowder's show today said, on Crowder's show today, that the FBI were the ones who put locks on the door where the docs were allegedly being stored." Interesting. Is that really?
I don't know.
I don't know what that means. They locked the door or something? No idea. Grofty says, "Buck the peck button, buck, buck, buck."
Yeah.
Grofty, a big fan of Chicken City.
Yes, we love Grofty.
Chicken City. A few of the chickens have moved to a new location, a top secret location. They've been rehomed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chicken City is much too large. There is too much chicken poop. It smells.
Wow.
Yeah.
It does, and especially on a warm, humid night.
Yeah, it's no good.
Through my closed windows somehow.
Opens his windows.
Even the Amish live far away from those wild things.
A few too many chickens. Yeah. A little overcrowded. Big city.
Jacob Carter says, "As a Christian, I must say, one, the rapture is non-biblical nonsense. Two, I can't wait for the second coming, but understand it's up to the Father. Also, hope you're having a great day, guys. God bless." Would you agree with that?
Well, agree.
I would agree on both counts.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Ken says, I keep alluding to moving out to provincial Philippines. It's my graphene. These same New York Times libs complain about the government, then celebrate worse. I can't read that. I don't know what it says. Never coming back to the U.S. Well, all right.
If you feel it like I feel graphene, follow your dreams.
Zeba Zepeda says, dude, you should pay attention to South America. Communism is brewing down here in Chile. Look for the 4th of September. Okay. And what does it say? Boric? He has all of the dictator vibes. Oh, and in Chile, that happens with salmon.
Oh, no.
Oh, the chicken poop
not
stuff?
Not the poop fish. No.
Not the poop fish.
Yeah, no. I thought it was only the tilapia.
No.
Don't ruin salmon for me as well.
Let me have salmon.
The perk of living in San Diego. Lots of fresh fish.
Yes.
I lived in Santiago, Chile for a while, and what I noticed most notoriously was that all the police in the city were national police. They were like feds. There is no local law enforcement there. So if a crazy guy takes hold of that government, he has the entire country's law enforcement system.
Wow. E. Rodriguez says, Tim, I live in New York and I am completely fed up with modern leftism. And while I hate staying, moving to a red state at this point in my life is extremely difficult. But I'm not giving up on it. I hear you, man.
Yeah.
It's not easy for everybody. When I was in Chicago and I moved to L.A., I just took a backpack and a couple $100 and just went. No plan. Nowhere to sleep. Just whatever. Figured it out. Worked out. I don't know, though. Suppose if you live in the middle of nowhere, you're going to be sleeping outside.
Yeah.
I guess sleeping outside is better than sleeping outside. Sleeping outside in the forest or a field is better than outside the city.
Very true.
Yeah. I don't know. There are a lot of bugs.
Come to California.
Yeah.
Trying to make our state seem better.
We're trying. Yeah.
Sorry, not a lot of bugs. We're not moving there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much pollen.
All right. Waffle Sense, it says, Ian, have you ever thought that you're not just seeing patterns in the universe, but that you're feeling God speak to you? Because in my experience, God manifests this kind of way, not with some audible voice in your ear.
Yes, Waffle Sensei, I love you, by the way, man. God speaks to me in shapes. I see visions of behavior. I don't necessarily – sometimes I'll hear words like an impulse of a sound, but normally it's a vision of me doing something or something happening. When I ask a question, that's the response.
The Bible for Unbearable says, Revelation 18:23, for your merchants were the great men of the earth, and by thy sorceries, all nations were deceived. The word sorceries is translated from the Greek word
pharmakeia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Wow, really?
Weird, yep. Yeah.
Interesting. Yep.
The spirit of sorcery that takes over the world was the spirit of pharmakeia.
Very, very interesting.
Yep, Revelation 18.
There's been for a while now, people have been talking about the signs. And they're trying to look at Revelation and then say, like, look, this is this thing and this is this thing.
Totally.
But I've heard that for a while. You know,
people,
I mean,
thought Hitler was the Antichrist because he talked about establishing the Third Reich, which was literally going to be like a 1,000-year dominion.
Right.
I mean, you know, there were a lot of reasons that Christians have thought we're in the final days for literally thousands of years. So, right. Yeah.
I missed the pharmakeia. What was that?
Revelations 18. You can read the exact verse again.
18:23.
Yeah.
Look up Revelation 18:23.
Yeah.
Mr. Toad says, what is Public Square's version of ESG?
Oh, love this question. We adamantly stand against ESG, environmental social governance standards, if you're not familiar. It's the new philosophy that's overtaken, especially the world of corporate investing. And so most any company you buy from that's owned by a corporation at this point adopts these ESG standards, and they rob your life in a lot of ways. They basically prioritize woke politics and nearsighted and almost ignorant principles related to the environment in their production of goods that you buy, and then they make you come along that journey with them, and they also carry that into hiring. And so this relates to things like diversity quotas. DEI is another word that's very similar, different philosophical framework, but they go in tandem often, which is diversity, equity, inclusion. Public Square stands against it by not focusing on identity politics at all. And the thing we are most concerned about in the world of manufacturing is not carbon emissions. It is make your stuff in America. Because if you make your stuff in America, statistically, it'll lead to less emissions because China is the world's great polluter most of that comes from manufacturing. So if we can trust that you're making your products in America, there's a good likelihood that it's far more sustainable than what's happening overseas too.
Right. Yeah.
Waffles says, have you guys seen Saudi Arabia's The Line? It's a mega city they are building.
Yes.
Look it up. It's weird dystopian
what
stuff.
Is
yes.
That?
I
have seen so many videos like this.
Yes.
It's nonsense. Some artist probably made it. I don't think
but
it's real.
But what's happening in this Agenda 2030 concept is mega cities that they want to put humans in, like,
centralized spots so that they can have farm, like wild land. But the problem is humans centralized do not do well. We need to be able to move in different directions to get away if there's a disaster.
Not just that. If you take a little bit of chicken poop, let's say one mop bucket full, and throw it into a field.
Give or take.
How long until that is washed away and dissipates?
Hmm.
Rather quickly. I mean, one rain probably. Take, I don't know, 200 tons of chicken poop and centralize it in the same place. And how long until it gets washed away? Exponentially longer. When you put all these people in one city and they're all taking dumps every day, how do you wash that away? It's very, very difficult to maintain and manage that system.
Gonna have to hit it with lasers.
Whereas for people who live in rural areas who are on septic systems know that if you do it right, you can leave that system for years. Mm-hmm. Not have to worry about it, you know, too much because bacteria takes care of it.
That's right.
That's called sustainable living.
Yeah.
I was just picturing a septic tank with a laser inside that blasts the carbon and turns it into graphene once it hits.
Remember the flooding in the New York subway system that was happening?
When was that?
So well, not just somewhat recently.
Yeah. And people were talking about how that system, it was built so long ago that they think it's on its last legs, but there's nothing you can really do to repair it.
Yep. So in New York, I could be wrong about this. This is what I was told. They have these big nitrogen tanks on street corners. You've seen them before, probably. Chrome tanks of nitrogen. And you'll see like steam. You'll see like a big orange cone of like steam coming out. What I was told is that the wiring systems of New York are so old that they're melting underground and falling apart. So they blast nitrogen to get to exhaust the heat.
Hmm.
So it's like a duct tape solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not true, though. I mean, just some dude in New York told me that, so maybe it's not real. But you got to understand, when you build a machine like the subway system, yet repairing that is difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what do you do? It's like, okay, we're advancing our new technology, but we've got how many square miles, how many miles in general of track that you would need to change for new technology?
Yeah.
That's the challenge of these big cities. So one thing you'll see is fascinating. Cell technology in poorer countries would be better than they were in America. The United States, we get the first network was like the iDEN network. And so, you know, we launched the cell network and we're like, look at this, our phones work in other places. Poor country couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't build it. Then the technology started becoming cheaper and cheaper. But by then we had already developed CDMA or something like that. So then these poor countries implement the stronger, better technology because it took them longer to get.
Wow.
And then we're trapped with these old garbage networks that we're trying to repurpose.
Looks like New York's got 248 miles of routes. This is the subway system. 665 miles of revenue track. I'm not sure what that is exactly, but a total of 850 miles of track.
Wow.
So there's revenue and non-revenue track. I'm not sure.
Yo, that's crazy.
Do you guys know much about Starlink?
I have Starlink.
You do?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
We've done tests on it, and the upload rate is impractical for a business.
Insufficient. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, 5 megabits.
Yeah.
Your last point.
Impractical for a streaming business.
Yeah.
I mean, for any business, to be honest.
Gotcha. So they're still in the early stages.
Yeah.
We got the, I got the RV version and the business version.
Yep.
And the business one's much bigger, and it's not faster.
Have you had luck linking them together?
We have not yet bonded them. But that's the next experiment we need to do because we have three. We have two RV units and one business unit. And so we also have the Ethernet system and we have a bonding unit. We can actually spread them out, blast them all off, and then bond them. And then it's a diminishing return. 5 megabits up per each, you'll probably end up with, 11 or 12 megabits.
Gotcha.
So it's a diminishing return.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. But, it's good. I mean, it's for people in rural areas, Starlink's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, in those poor countries, like you're mentioning, if you're in a poor rural country.
But I'll be honest, if you're running a business, we already have satellite internet. That's good.
Yeah.
I think our satellite internet is actually faster than Starlink, but the latency is 10 times slower. That's the issue.
Whoa.
With Starlink, the latency, I think, was 68 milliseconds, and our existing satellite is like 360 or something like that. So five times.
It's faster, but it has worse latency. What's that mean exactly?
It's longer ping. So if you're playing a video game, you'll get lag, right? You're playing World of Warcraft. You're going to swing.
So it sends more data per packet, but it sends packets less frequently?
It's a further distance because Starlink is low. I think it was low orbit. There, I got it out. Yeah. I think that's what it is. I don't know. The lower latency allows you to send and receive signals faster, but there's less data in it, I guess. And it could just be because of congestion or something. You know, I have no idea.
We'll have to get Elon on the show and ask him about it.
Yeah, that's
a great idea. Yep.
Anytime. Joss Mosk says, 2 Timothy 3, 1-5 talks about the last days before the return of Jesus and sounds like where we are now in the world. Mm. Okay.
But I think it always does. I mean, you mentioned like Hitler, because Hitler is the best example of someone that would have been the Antichrist I can think of.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons as you look back. In fact, there's a year, maybe one of y'all can help me and look this up, but there was a year, I think it was 636 AD. It was the darkest year in human history because the volcano blew up in Southeast Asia. And it sent the whole world into black for a year. Like the sun didn't shine for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, ooh. Crazy. It's like you hear stories that like that. And you're like, can you imagine what the people must have been thinking? Like,
there's no food, we're dying.
No. And yeah, diseases start running rampant. Like you had every reason to think you're in the end times.
Wow.
And here we are today. So, you know.
Stellar Orbit says, I think we crashed the Public Square app.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be back up. We've got an amazing team of devs. This is the beauty of building the plane in flight, and we just launched, so I really appreciate the traffic. That's amazing. But you asked the greatest challenge, which is in the world of software, when you've got a lean and mean team accommodating the demand. Thank you so much, everybody, for wanting to join the community. It should be up and running. Back to you ASAP. Yes.
Brofin says, Mike, is there an API?
Lots of APIs. It would depend on what they're looking for.
Oh, well, there
in
you
terms
go.
Of like being able to source businesses from the platform for other uses. Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
All right. Kyle Bratton says, literally just downloaded the app. We'll be putting my business on here and convince my friends to do the same.
Hey, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
That's what makes the platform special.
That's so cool.
I was surprised to see how many in D.C. were on the app.
Right?
There's a lot.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm going to D.C. this weekend. We're going to make sure we're going to good businesses.
That's there right. you go.
Who don't hate us.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I would probably assume, too, because while there are a lot of businesses, I wouldn't say it's a large percentage of total businesses, right?
Like there might 30 million small businesses in the United States.
Yeah.
And so we've got awesome partners in this space that have had a lot of hope for us from the beginning because they just have been exposed to so many small business owners. You guys have had Charlie Kirk on your show.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie Kirk, when he first heard about this in January, looked me in the eyes and said, in the next year, you'll have 100,000 businesses on this thing. I mean, the market is just so large for it because there is such a coalition of these people. So the potential is pretty wild. 30 million small businesses in the United States. Mm-hmm. And what gets me really excited is like all the employees that are positively affected through that. Because you think for every small business, you've got a few employees most of the time you're accounting for, too. And so if we can help even a tiny percentage of that, like, that's a dream come true.
A lot of people are asking about Canada.
Ah, yes. We're coming. I'll tell you that. And I will also say this. It is our next country. So let us take care of the United States first and hire a little bit more of a robust team. And then we will take on Canada. But that is our next stop.
All right. One more super chat. We got Justin Green who says, Joe Kent wins primary election. Joe Kent won?
I don't know. I'd have to check. I believe it.
The 8-day election or whatever?
Yeah. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends, and head over to timcast.com. We're going to have that members-only show coming up for you at about 11 p.m. tonight. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. Mike, do you want to shout anything out, considering we just shouted out Public
Square? Yeah, I feel super grateful. PublicSQ.com, if you want to learn more about the site. You can follow me on Twitter, at RealMichaelSeif, S-E-I-F, just half my last name. I'll make it easier on you. At RealMichaelSeif, that's where I'm at on Twitter. That's probably where I post the most. And would love to have you on the journey with us.
Right on.
If you want to see me more often, you should go follow me on Instagram or WeChat at CloserKitty. And you should go subscribe to Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube. We go live at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time, every Monday through Friday.
I'm getting confirmation that Jamie Herrera-Butler conceded to Joe Kent. That's from Fox News.
Right on.
That's
great exciting. News.
All right, guys. Great show tonight. Awesome to see you, Mike. That was great.
Thank
really
you
cool,
guys.
Actually. Really
appreciate
awesome. Bye, everyone. I love you.
Yeah. And I would say, too, for this app crashing tonight, to check in tomorrow. Thank you so much for coming and discussing this with us, Michael. This is a huge white pill. I'm so glad it's working now. And I want to say there's an old Latin adage which says, we're all familiar with it, if you would have peace, prepare for war. And I think that's the best way to live life. And I will leave you with that. You guys can follow me on Twitter and minds.com at sourpatchlids, as well as sourpatchlids.me.
We will see you all over at timcast.com. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.